Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, looks like we're going to get a health care vote today. I do want you to realize, though, it has nothing to do with health care. It is a vote about insurance. Oh, wait, no, it's not a vote about insurance. It's all politics, and it has nothing to do with you or me. Yet we'll break it down with Pat Brady. He'll join us after 7 o'clock. Howard Sudbury will be in. What are we previewing? The Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, it's opening weekend at Arlington, and the Kentucky Derby's this weekend.
And Dave, at the Kentucky Derby this year, you will be riding.
No, I don't believe.
I've talked to some people. You're a little large for a jockey, but they said, I'm definitely out. They're going to need you to mount. Is that what it's called? A mount?
It's called a mounting. Yeah.
You're going to mount one of the horses.
I think that's not a real good place to make your riding debut.
Oh, I thought you had some experience in this area.
No, I once drove a harness horse.
Did you?
I did that too.
At Maywood.
Yeah, that was cool.
You guys did the thing?
We get to keep the whip and the goggles too.
Well, that's cool.
Well, Steve, the whip and the goggles in your case is just any weekend.
It was cool, and it's bouncier than you think.
But can't you tip the little carriage deal over?
Yes,
you
can.
You're not supposed to.
Yeah, they discourage that, but you can.
That's not advisable?
No.
Okay.
I feel like we should have mint juleps for Howard when he gets here.
But he usually brings them.
Yeah, that's what he brings.
Howard's a good guy.
Delicious. He leaves them, too.
We have to.
I thought Steve was just going to steal cake. Now I know he's after the booze as well.
Yeah, I've never heard that from Steve before.
I do enjoy mint julep.
In keeping with the competitive spirit of the Steve Cochran Show, are we picking our Derby horses this week as well?
Yeah, but we'll probably wait way until when is the Derby?
Saturday.
Friday.
Friday at 9:50.
How many shows are there?
We'll pick today. Why not? We'll pick today.
All right, good.
I'll take, has anyone seen my keys? Isn't that one of the horses?
It's very competitive this year. That's
strong,
not one.
Strong. We'll do the top six at six. Why don't we do that right now?
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
So last night about 8 o'clock, House members of your House, the People's House, got a copy of a bill they're going to vote on today. They didn't have time to read it. They don't have time to read it. So everything they made fun of the Democrats for with Obamacare, they're doing exactly the same thing. Today, the House was scheduled a vote on the Republican plan to replace the Affordable Care Act. It has not been scored by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a big problem. And this is nothing but a political move, which will break down again after 7 o'clock. The Republican majority leader, Representative Kevin McCarthy, is confident it'll pass. They apparently have the votes, unless there's a few that bail at the last minute. That'll be big news today. President Trump plans to ease restrictions on political activity by churches and charities. White House officials say he's backed away from a broader religious liberty order that would have let faith-based organizations and companies avoid serving or hiring gay people. Yeah, that might have been a problem. But instead has opened up the door for churches to do more politics. That old separation of church and state thing, that was overrated, wasn't it?
Back in the 1700s.
Oh, did you see also yesterday said that the Middle East peace process is easier than people think it is.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, the Palestinians and the Jews, what do they know?
And that's not like that conflict has been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years.
All it needed was a little Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Easier than the North Korea situation and healthcare.
Yes. Yes. Who knew healthcare in North Korea were so complicated? Let's fix the Middle East instead. Oh, and then there's this. We got to get Paul Coit on. Sandberg, dial up the Coit. We got to get Paul Coit on. Prince Philip is stepping down from his public life at 95. Mr. Short Timer. He doesn't have a health problem. You know, you would think that this announcement, all these announcements always come with, you know, for health concerns. At 95, he just goes, I'm sick of cutting ribbons.
Yeah, no kidding.
I am sick of following the Queen around, two steps behind and to the right.
Do you know how we get all of these alerts on our phones from all the various news sources?
And you got this one and went, what?
Did you see last night they sent it said that the Royal Court is having an emergency meeting last night.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately thought, oh no, something's wrong with Queen Elizabeth. This was the announcement.
She's only 91.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
talk about robbing
she's
a crazy.
Our buddy Tom Rivers over there, he tweeted this morning that Prince Philip made 209 appearances last year.
That's a lot.
That's
a lot.
You know what, though?
That's a lot.
He's got nothing on Orion Samuelson.
Nope. Yeah, well, that is true. But that 209 appearances.
That's a lot.
Well, he was 94 then. He was younger.
Oh, yeah. He was just a kid then.
The Queen and Prince Philip are in church this morning. By the way, supposedly this doesn't take effect today. He's winding down. It'll take effect this fall. You're 95, you go, oh, 6 months, I'm going to retire.
Yeah. By the way, this son mistakenly reported overnight that he had died.
Prince Charles?
No, Prince Philip.
Oh, the Sun, S-U-N.
Yes.
Oh, I got
the Sun.
The
correct.
Sun, S-U-N.
The Sun newspaper.
Yeah, no, he didn't die.
When they called that emergency meeting, and then they had to do a retraction about 2 minutes later.
He's actually, he looks good.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico is right on the verge of bankruptcy. If you'd like to buy Puerto Rico, I think it's available this morning for $8. The U.S. territory of 3 to 4 million citizens has ever-increasing debt, stands at about $73 billion right now. It could be the largest insolvency in U.S. history. Detroit's $18 billion in restructuring in 2013 previously led the way. Will we bail out Puerto Rico? Well, I mean, we're not going to, you know, let the people of Puerto Rico...
No.
Fall into some Venezuelan chaos here.
No, there'll be some sort of incentive package. There'll be a pack. They'll get a package.
But
a bailout. They will.
They'll be sunsetted. Mm-hmm. But Puerto Rico is certainly on people's minds this morning. And then there's this. Facebook's going to hire 3,000 people to watch Facebook. Facebook's hiring 3,000 people to look at Facebook and see if people are committing threats of violence or violent acts, so they can alert some special Facebook council, or they'll flip a special Facebook switch, and those videos will be taken down immediately, and those accounts will be stripped of their ability to be accounts.
I think it's a fantastic idea in light of all the videos that have been posted online lately.
It surprised me how many people they need, though. 2 billion users. They're approaching 2 billion users. 3,000 doesn't sound like much, but wouldn't you think with all the technology, they'd need, like, you know, A guy,
right?
Just a guy.
In a basement.
In a room.
How do you watch everybody's news feed?
Don't know.
They'll split it. They'll divide it up amongst themselves.
No, but there's got to be some sort of algorithm that they've written that, you know, watches it. Everybody, well, 2 billion divided by 3,000. That's how many you get. Everybody gets that many.
The only worry is how quickly they catch it. Because if you post something, I post something, it goes up immediately. So it'll be a race to see how fast they can catch what could be illegal.
Well, that's the key, to do it in a timely fashion to make sure it gets taken down. And yesterday, James Comey had an exchange with the senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, which may have been one of my favorites of the past, I don't know, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
when James Comey suggested there was an exchange over whether or not Anthony Weiner should ever see classified material. And it came down to whether or not there ought to be a law about it. And Weiner suggested to Comey that there should be a Weiner statute. And Comey responded that, as far as I know, we don't have an Anthony Weiner statute. And Graham said, maybe we should. It just made my day. The discussion of a Weiner statute.
You know what? We do have a Weiner circle in Chicago.
Yes, that's different than a Weiner statute. A Weiner statute would make it illegal for a Weiner to get classified material.
I'm not touching that one.
See, this is when I turn into a 12-year-old.
Yeah, you really
I thought you were saying Weiner statue.
A Weiner statue would be different as well. Yeah. So I'm not sure Lindsey Graham wouldn't put one up.
There is one of those in front of the Weiner circle, though.
Hey, you know what else we need to do? Do we have the Jake, I think you pulled this yesterday. We don't need to do it in here in the top six, but do you have the Stephen Colbert joke that he's in trouble for? Yeah, remind me to get to that. We'll play the Madigan game later. We got a lot to do. I know it's Star Wars Day. I don't know what that means, but I know that all you Star Wars geeks are happy.
Steve,
May the 4th
be with you.
Yeah, okay. So it's a Star Wars day for people who are Star Wars fans with a lisp?
Yep. Sort of, yeah. Okay. We'll go with that.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
The wiener statue. That's funny. Is Nick DiGilio joining us? Do we have a Nick?
He is so excited, as he should be, about his Walk of Fame ceremony induction.
I'm sorry, I was talking to Pat Brady about radishes, so I forgot to
call. Oh, you were talking to Pat Brady about radishes. All right, if you could call him right now, that'd be great.
I do like a good radish.
Don't you defend her.
A little salt is good.
No, but Nick is super excited, as he should be, about the Walk of Fame ceremonies on the 25th. He was in here this morning just a little giddy. I've never seen Nick giddy.
I told you Bill and Wendy are going to be doing the ceremony this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're going to do something where each of the previous, like the Walk of Fame members who are already in, who attend, they're in charge of keeping an eye, sort of like an AA sponsor.
Like Dave?
Keeping an eye. So like, we'll assign Dave to Nick to keep an eye on him. Just watch him. Dave, you'll be responsible to follow Nick around 24 hours a day for, you know, up to 6 months to make sure he is Walk of Fame worthy.
Could I have somebody else?
Oh, jeez.
It's just Nick's schedule, I think. You know,
it's unfair, Dave, but that's the one we drew. Man.
By the way, you know how you said we're going to be doing magic beforehand?
Yeah.
I literally got an email from someone, are you really going to do magic as a warm-up for the ceremony? Because he's a huge magician and huge magic fan, and he wanted to see you cut you into three pieces.
Yeah, well, I think that'd be a good warm-up. Nick, I'm going to cut Andrea into three boxes and then try to put her back together.
At the ceremony?
Yeah. Yeah.
That should be the closer.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, it's a crowd warm-up, what can I tell you? How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you, man?
Doing fine. Let's break down some of these movies. The Dinner.
Yeah, The Dinner is a new film with Richard Gere and Laura Linney, Steve Coogan and Chloe Sevigny, a really terrific cast.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's about two couples that are having a dinner at an upscale restaurant, and then stuff about their past and stuff about their present and secrets start to emerge during the entire dinner. And it's these
awkward.
Four really terrific actors. Yeah, yeah. You know, the last time Richard Gere and Laura Linney made a movie, they made one of the best, one of the most effective and scary horror movies.
One of my favorites.
The Mothman Prophecy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Primal Fear.
Yeah, well, they were in Primal Fear, too, but Mothman Prophecies, Primal Fear is not a horror movie, but Mothman Prophecies is a really, really scary movie. If you've never seen it, it's from 2002, and it's a terrific movie. And Primal Fear is a great movie, too. So they're good together, and, you know, the premise is really interesting, and it certainly is counter-programming to what the bigger movies are, the big movie that's coming out. So it might be smart that they're releasing, a smaller movie for adults while everybody else and their kids and family goes to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Will Andre be there? You know, my dinner with Andre?
Yeah, I think he's at every dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so does it all take place at the table, or what's the narrative?
Yeah, it's one night with these people at this dinner where all these secrets are revealed and stuff like that. And, you know, to watch these four people, you know, act. Steve Coogan, by the way, is one of my favorite people on the planet. And he can
actor.
Do everything. Obviously, he's hilarious, but he can also do drama as well. So I'm interested in seeing that one.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting premise. And, of course, what's the most awkward thing that goes on after an awkward dinner? It's the ride home.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Very
quiet. I've had a few of those, yeah.
Very quiet in the car until somebody starts talking, and then it gets loud really fast.
Yep.
Next thing you know,
you're cutting somebody into three pieces.
Exactly. And you're not putting the boxes back together.
Boy, do I know that.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Sequels are dangerous. First one was a big, big, big hit, almost universally loved. Is this any good?
Yep. I haven't seen it, but everything I hear is that it's almost or equal to the first one. And if that's the case, then I'm very excited because I loved the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Very entertaining, very exciting. But the thing that I loved about Guardians of the Galaxy was just how funny it was. I mean, genuinely hilarious. With a kick-ass 70s classic rock soundtrack, and this one also has a great classic rock soundtrack. I want to mention really quickly, the guys who made the classic song Lakeshore Drive?
Yeah.
Okay, I had the guy who wrote the song on my show last week. They chose, James Gunn, the director, is from St. Louis, so he's from the Midwest, so he knows the song. They chose that song to be in the movie and on the soundtrack.
Well, that's cool.
And it opens the movie. So, like, this local dude, these guys who wrote this classic song that we know here in Chicago and in the Midwest, are going to get worldwide exposure for a song that's, like, from 1971.
And a huge movie.
Yeah, massive. The other thing that's cool about it is it brings back all the Guardians from the last movie. And you find out that Kurt Russell is, in fact, Chris Pratt's dad in the movie. And so that's the coolest. Because anytime you add Kurt Russell to a movie, it's automatically good.
Yeah, I wish he'd work more.
Yeah, well, he's in Fate of the Furious, too.
Yeah, but I wish he'd work more in a movie that I'd see.
Yeah, I wish he'd work more in, like doing, like, a lead role in carrying a movie, because he's so great.
He is great.
The other thing is, another small role in this movie played by Sylvester Stallone. So you get both Tango and Cash.
Oh, is that fantastic.
Nick, what's more exciting, that or the Walk of Fame ceremony for you coming up on the 25th?
Mm. Well, clearly the Walk of Fame, but Tango and Cash is a close second.
How do you know we don't have Kurt Russell coming by?
See, don't tease me.
Mm. And then there's something.
If you do, I got to wear my eye patch and talk like Snake Plissken the whole time.
Of course you do. Actually, that might be a good idea anyway. Three Generations is the other movie you have on your list. What is this?
This is a film starring Naomi Watts and Susan Sarandon and Elle Fanning. Elle Fanning is Naomi Watts' daughter, and Susan Sarandon plays her grandmother. And so it's this three generations of women, a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter, dealing with the fact that the daughter wants to make a transition from female to male. So it's a very timely film at this point, and Elle Fanning plays the character who wants to change in transgender.
I'm guessing this wasn't shot in North Carolina?
No, it was not shot in North Carolina. And it's, you know, again, three terrific actresses. And it's a really topical, you know, subject. And the director is actually really talented. So I'm actually looking forward to it. It's interesting because you got the giant movie, the Guardians of the Galaxy, which is going to break all kinds of box office records this weekend. But you got really great two alternative adult smart films that you can see if you don't want to see the big comic book movie. So it's kind of an interesting weekend.
And for a guy like Nick, this is the golden age of horror films. Not that they're all being well made, but they're making a bunch of money. And if you go to see a movie now, you're going to see half the trailers are for horror movies.
Yeah.
Or high suspense movies.
It's going to continue because they're making so much money. I mean, you look at the most successful movie this year, if you're looking at profit from budget to what it's grossed, without question, the biggest success of the year is Get Out, the Jordan Peele movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Without question.
Yeah.
And that's a great horror genre movie. And, you know, and it guarantees that more of these films are going to get made, which makes me happy.
And it's got laughs in it, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nick's going to do the Terminator Tuesday at MovieCo. I don't mean he'll do a live recreation of it. I mean he'll actually show the movie on the big screen.
Yeah. On the big screen, 4K, digitally remastered. It's the original Terminator, which is my favorite of all the Terminator movies. And it's $11.25. We had to raise the prices. No longer $10 to get in. It's 11 and a quarter.
Okay.
But parking is still free.
Still a steal.
Still a steal. I totally agree. And the movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it and we'll talk about it afterwards. I'm really excited about this one. The Terminator is a great movie, and it's gonna be great to see it back on the big screen.
All right, buddy, and we are counting down the days till you are slapped into the concrete.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I still can't believe it. Seriously, it's crazy.
Well, it's going to be a great day, and Andre will be cut into three pieces.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that part.
Spin the boxes around, and you know, with my ADD, I may have misplaced one of the boxes. You know, and then you're only at two.
Well, wait till I see Nick inducted.
Oh no!
And Annie and
I think
Link
we have to do it at the opening.
Okay.
What we can do is we can take your separate pieces and spread you around the stage so you have an angle.
Oh, good! Like ashes being spread. Yeah. It'd
be well, terrible. Not
if you forget. If you forget the middle part, she's going to end up really short.
That's it's a fair point.
Thank you, Nick.
I got to go to magician's camp. That's Nick DiGilio. I'm Steve Cochran. You know who you are. We're back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
breaking news coverage. Princess Diana is seriously injured and two other people have died following a car crash in Paris. Police confirmed the crash has killed Diana's companion, film producer Dodi Al-Fayed, and the chauffeur. It happened in a tunnel as Diana's car was being pursued by press photographers.
I've just been handed from the Reuters news service what is marked bulletin. Being sourced through another news organization. We don't know who they talked to put this on the Reuters news agency wire. It says Princess Diana has died.
Well, if you're like me, you remember it like it was yesterday because you stayed up all night and watched the coverage and you hoped it wasn't true, but in fact it was at a point in her life where she appeared to have finally found her own voice and some freedom in her life. Freedom from the palace, freedom from all that made her famous. And a world-renowned figure, doing great work charitably, and it started out something that still maintains a strong life to this day of trying to eliminate war zones of landmines where little children are being killed or maimed. Princess Diana and Dodi Al-Fayed leave a Paris hotel, and later we'll find out, right, that the chauffeur had been drinking, and a car race from photographers. Yeah. Trying to get back to wherever Fayed was staying. He and Diana. They're killed in a terrible car crash in a tunnel in Paris. Andrea County joins us. As part of Dateline NBC, airing a two-hour Princess Diana special featuring interviews about the life and death of the People's Princess. Where were you that night, Andrea?
Hi, Steve. I actually was 2 months into my broadcasting career, just a Cub reporter working in Mississippi, in Greenville, Mississippi. I remember coming home and seeing on TV, it was a crawler, you know, saying Princess Diana had been in an accident. And honestly, I thought next morning we'd wake up and she had a couple of broken legs or something.
Yeah,
you know, I never in a million years thought I would wake up and she would be gone.
I thought the exact same thing. We were in Vegas and a friend of mine said Princess Diana was in a car crash. And I said, oh, like a fender bender, you know, scrapes and bruises. And she said, no, I think it's pretty serious.
It's not how she was supposed to die, you know, in a car accident. It just seems so surreal.
Yeah, and it's one of those mileposts in life. And one of the things on your special, you're going to talk to the police chief who was the chief at that time, right?
Yeah, it's the first time that she's done an interview. Her name is Martine, and she was the police chief at the time. And it was the largest investigation in Paris history. And there's one question that still haunts her today. They've always wanted to know who was driving that white Fiat that swiped the Mercedes that Diana was in. They were never able to find that car or the driver. And that's the one thing that haunts the former Paris police chief.
It's rather amazing when you think about it. I mean, granted, 20 years ago, we weren't in the era of everybody's got a cell phone, everybody's got a camera, everybody wants their 15 minutes, so everybody talks to everybody. But it's still amazing that only 20 years ago, with all of that on video, the car was never found and nobody ever talked.
No, I know. It's incredible. And all the two investigations and inquest, I mean, it was never ending because Mohamed Al-Fayed was convinced that this was murder and that they needed to solve it. Someone needed to be held accountable. But in the end, the conclusion was very simple. It was an accident. It was drinking and driving.
Andrea, your piece says the former bodyguard was saying that he thinks that if Diana had more security after she divorced Prince Charles, that this possibly could have been prevented. But didn't she have all kinds of security with Dodi Al-Fayed and his people?
Ken Wharf was her former head of security when she was with the palace, and he urged her, do not, I know you're giving up your title, but don't give up your security. And unfortunately, Diana didn't listen, and she went it alone. And yes, they did have security. They had Trevor Rees-Jones, but it wasn't the same. You know, it wasn't that same level of security that she was used to when she was at the palace.
It's the life and death of Princess Diana, a Dateline investigation, and it airs tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Chicago time, 9 o'clock East and West, wherever you are around the country. Check your local listings. Who surprised you the most when you were sitting down with all the folks you talked to?
I really enjoyed talking to Andrew Coulthurst. He's the one who was friends with Diana. He met her on a ski trip when they were teenagers, and she came back around to him after she got married. They hadn't talked in years, and suddenly he became her confidant. He was the one who shaped her kind of as this charitable woman. He pushed her to do more speeches and to get involved more. And then ultimately, he's the one who ended up recording her on those tapes that were given to Andrew Morton, which made the book, which, you know, was so explosive to the monarchy. And so Andrew Coulthurst, to me, had such an incredible journey with Diana. And he cried. He said, you know, I said, you changed her life. And he said, well, she changed mine. And he was literally crying in the interview 20 years after her death.
Is he the one who talked to you, Andrea, about Diana's concerns about Camilla Parker Bowles?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Diana called her the Rottweiler, that she had bad breath. You know, she would take jabs at Camilla Parker Bowles, which, of course, as you know, the famous line, there were three people in this marriage. And, you know, of course, Charles ended up with Camilla. But that was the thorn in Diana's side for so long, was the Camilla Parker Bowles relationship. Friends, and then, of course, turned romantic again.
And my understanding is, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but this is not about some longing for Charles or saving the marriage, but about being replaced and having Camilla become some sort of mother figure to the boys who were still very young at that point.
Diana had, according to the people we talked to, she had huge fears about losing those boys, that somehow the monarchy was trying to make her look unstable, and that, you know, that those boys might be taken away from her. And I think everyone can agree, Diana loved those boys.
Right.
You know, that was her stability. That's what she lived for, were her sons. And so that was her greatest fear. And that's what really kicked off her doing these tapes and this book. And, you know, she used her popularity as a weapon. You know, she knew how to, you know, make things go her way, because people loved her and it worked. You know, they didn't take her kids away. You know, she continued to be a great mother to them. So it's very convoluted. You know, there's so many layers to this story.
The great loss is not just for the British people, but for the world, because she was just getting her feet under her for all the amazing things that she was doing and could have done going forward. And it's not just about the Landmine Foundation. It's about the impact she would have had over a world she never really wanted to be a part of, but became a part of. But she seemed like she was finally getting comfortable with who she was. Maybe she found love with Dodi Fayed. Maybe she didn't. That all remains to be seen. But, you know, the impact on her sons. I mean, you know, we just saw the news a couple of weeks ago,
right,
about Prince Andrew saying, Andrew?
No, Harry.
Harry.
Yeah, no, that would be her brother-in-law. Prince Harry. Prince Harry talking about being unable to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that stiff upper lip nonsense, you know, where the palace didn't deal with it until the queen was forced to talk about it. And now today we have Prince Philip stepping aside. But all of it still, I mean, when you think of the monarchy, it's not a stretch 20 years down the road where you think of Princess Diana now.
No.
Yeah, I mean, the monarchy has, you know, she paved the way, you know, for her sons to be the way they are and for everyone to be more open, I feel like. I mean, look at the queen jumping out of the helicopter at the Olympics
in
London.
Right.
You know, the spoof. You know, it's just a different world now. And I think it, you know, one person changed that, and that was her. And now, you know, now we do see Prince Harry opening up and William and talking about mental health issues. And, you know, they're not afraid, just like she wasn't afraid to touch the hand of an AIDS patient. You know, they're not afraid to talk about, I sought treatment for mental health. You know, it's wonderful that they're talking about these things, because it makes you feel like there is something there, that they're like us.
Yeah, she made the royals human.
They're wealthy,
she made them
and
human.
Famous, but exactly. She made them human, and it's nice to see.
Yeah, as a first-time grandfather, it breaks my heart to think that, you know, these beautiful grandkids, what kind of a grandmother would she be, right? I mean, she would have loved
it. Oh, my gosh, you know what? Steve, I thought the exact same thing the other day. I saw some pictures of Princess Charlotte that had been taken by Kate Middleton, you know, their daughter.
Right.
And it looked she looked exactly like William. And in turn, I thought, well, she looks like Diana, because William looked like Diana.
Right.
And this child looks like William. So I was thinking how proud she would have been, you know, to have these grandchildren. And it is heartbreaking. She would have been in her 50s. I'm sure she would have looked fabulous.
Yeah, she would have been young,
you know,
young
so
and fun.
She would have had so much life left to live and so many things to do, you know. But I do know she was searching for that special someone, you know, whether it was Dodi or not. We also look at Hasnat Khan, the heart surgeon, that apparently, you know, people say that was the love of her life, was Hasnat Khan.
Right.
But he didn't want that life. He didn't want Diana's life. He wanted to just save patients, and he worked all the time. And she even went to Pakistan to meet his family, you know, to see if this could work. Could we move back to Pakistan? But, you know, it didn't work. And then the chance invite by Mohammed Al-Fayed led her to Dodi. Was Dodi really, you know, the man she was going to be with? I mean, we'll never know.
It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's tomorrow night. It's our friend Andrea Canning, who does great work. We're all co-presidents of the Andrea Canning fan club here.
Oh my gosh, thank you. You guys are so nice.
Dateline NBC, The People's Princess. By the way, we didn't mention this, but it includes the former bodyguard Ken Wharf talking about what Andrea Darlis brought up about security. And if the palace had given her more appropriate, in quotes, security, maybe things would be different. There's a lot of maybes there. But looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks, Andrea.
That's,
she's great.
Andrea Canning, at Canning Andrea, I think on social media, if I remember correctly.
Let me see the big horse run. Let him roll. Let him roll. Let him roll. Let him roll.
Oh, look, it's horsey music. It's a big, big weekend. Arlington opens.
Swap citation, man of woe.
You got the Derby. And our friend Howard Sudbury is here. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Steve. Always great to be with you guys.
And,
you got Pat, you got Dave, you got Andrea, the whole gang here.
Everybody's ready upstairs. You've got, and we didn't find this out until 6 o'clock this morning, but apparently Steve Grzanich in the newsroom is just a total lush for mint juleps.
He is. Yeah, well, is he on his way down?
Yeah,
did you bring
down
him, Howard?
Yeah.
We got him
the
down
bottle.
Here,
I'm on my way.
I always bring a bottle. Do you have other guests that bring booze to you?
No, Dave's usually in charge of that.
Dave.
I
and he keeps it to himself.
Accommodate. No, I share.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yes, he's very good about it.
Cheers.
Yes.
To the new season at Arlington.
Raise
cheers.
A glass
to the Kentucky
to
Derby.
Mr. Duchess Juan, Howard, and the entire staff.
Thank you very much.
And here you go.
Oh, very tasty.
Good morning.
Very julepy. You can taste all 60 of the
perfume. It is julepy. I like this group. 7:13 in the morning. They're drinking mint julep.
We've been up for hours.
You like golf. You like horse racing.
Yeah, we're easy to entertain. all right, so we asked Pat to jump in on this, too, before we get to the politics later in the hour, because Pat, at various times, has been drunk enough where he thought he was dating a horse. all right, so everybody's looked at their list for the horses. We talked about the favorites earlier, but Howard, who do you like for the Derby?
Well, it's still a little bit early, as the Derby will go off about 5:46 on Saturday. I am leaning toward right now a group. I'm going to go against the favorite, the likely favorite, Classic Empire. He's had some interruptions in training this year. I don't know if he's quite ready. Always Dreaming is one that catches my eye. He ran a powerful race in the Florida Derby when he won. He's got the right running style. He's going to be within touch of the pace. Pace is going to be pretty hot. Speaking of pace, I like a closer named Gunavera that's going to come from way back. I think he has a chance to get there if they melt down. And I also have my eye on Gormley, who won the Santa Anita Derby. I think he's got a
shot. Gormley was really good in the Harry Potter movies.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And that's another reason to like him.
Right.
What do you think of Irish War Cry? Some have him as the favorite. Others are saying don't touch him. I know he had solid victories in Wood Memorial for one, but... What do you think of Irish War?
Yeah, that was a nice race, and he's another one that has a chance. He ran a big race there. You know, they come from prep races from all over the country, and that's the difficult part of handicapping the Derby. You kind of have to decide which race that you think was the best out of the prep races, and that's, you know, it's tough to do. That's why you get a decent price in the Derby generally.
Was there a lack this year, Howard, of a super horse coming out of the prep races? I mean, nobody is really...
Well, you know, they say that every year. They always say, this is a mediocre group. Well, really, once the horse wins the Kentucky Derby...
They're not mediocre anymore.
Yeah, what if they win the Preakness and go on and win the Triple Crown? Then you've got a superstar on your hands. They weren't raving about California Chrome when he won the Kentucky Derby. He became one of the greatest horses of all time.
Right.
So we don't know yet. They're 3 years old at this point. They're still developing, they're still improving, and we don't know which one's going to be at their best on Saturday.
I couldn't help but notice that here 2 days out, you're dodging. So you're not going to give me a favorite for you?
My favorite, I'm leaning toward Always Dreaming.
But with the ability to change by Saturday.
I will change my mind by Saturday, or possibly change my mind on Saturday. And then the way I bet it, you know, Steve, is you use all kinds of them on top. So we put a lot of money into it. We put it into a pool. And the key is to get who's going to run second, third, maybe even fourth in the race, and then you can make a lot of money.
Pat, who do you like?
Consistent with our drinking theory here, I'm going with Irish War Cry.
Mm-hmm. All right.
6-1 right now, but that'll change.
Dave?
Well, I was already going with Always Dreaming, so can I stay with Always Dreaming, even though Howard also likes Always
Dreaming?
You
can do anything you want.
Absolutely, you can. Always Dreaming for Mr. Ennett. Andrea?
You know, I initially liked Battle of Midway. His odds now not very good, 30-1. I'm going to go with...
Go with Patch. Come on.
I like Patch, but
somebody
the one I...
Patch.
I don't know. He's 30-1 also. I'm going to... It's between Always Dreaming and Irish War Cry.
What about Practical Joker?
I'm going Always Dreaming.
He's got a shot, Pat, Practical Joker.
We got a if lot you of people mention, coming after Always Dreaming. Yes, but Howard?
If you mention 8 or 10 horses, I will tell you, got a shot. Right, I'll never tell you the one can't win, because the second you do that, the horse wins.
Yeah. Mary Vanderbilt, do you have an opinion on these horsies?
I'll take McCracken. Can I have him?
Yeah, McCracken. You can have
McCracken. McCracken's only lost one time, last time out.
There you go.
He had won 4 in a row before that, and he's training very, very well.
And his jockey has to be named Phil? Is that what our understanding is?
Yes, that's mandatory. Or you couldn't have gotten in the race.
What do you think the Irish horse, Thundersnow?
Thundersnow, he won over in Dubai. One of those horses is going to come over and win someday, but I don't think it's going to be. When it does, it's going to surprise me, and I'm gonna bet against it. So he's a nice horse. He's well-bred, won a lot of turf races.
Skilling would love him.
It would surprise me. It would shock me. But
Thundersnow.
I'm going to go with IRAP, and here's why. Even though we've got a one-eyed horse, which is a great story, here's a story of how IRAP got named. At the Ocean Breeze Ranch, this horse baby had just undergone interleukin-1 receptor antagonist protein therapy, short-named in the vet world as IRAP.
Oh,
so the horse,
I hadn't read that.
The horse shows up, and the van driver sees the word IRAP on the horse's papers, and so he identified the young horse as IRAP. When the owner, Paul Redham, was told about the van driver's mix-up, he thought it was funny and said, "That's a cool name. We'll call him IRAP." This horse is named after a medication, after interleukin-1. I like IRAP. IRAP's my pony.
That is a cool story.
Can I ask you about one more? J-Boy's Echo, the Dale Roman's
J-Boy's
horse.
J-Boy's Echo.
I always love a Dale Roman's horse, but this one was, I think, purchased on sale, which throws me a little bit, but he's a Dale Roman's horse. What do you think of J-Boy's Echo?
Well, he won a nice race up in the Gotham in New York, which is the prep race generally for the Wood Memorial. His only win outside of the breaking his maiden, ran fourth last time in the Bluegrass Stakes. I will say the same thing that I've said about all of them. Not impossible, yep, but not my favorite. Didn't like his last race in the Wood Memorial. Don't think he's accomplished that much as of yet. And Steve Grzanich is down here. True
Steve,
to form for
you?
His mint julep.
Did we get your mint julep?
Cheers. How you doing? Cheers.
All right, so Steve, I know you couldn't give a rat's butt about these ponies. Right. You're more into for the mint juleps. But nobody's picked Gervin yet. Can I put you down for a Gervin?
Gervin. It sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, I'll give
you
Gervin.
What are the odds on that one?
Producer's booth, anybody?
Gervin's
guys,
I think Gervin.
Jake, you got a pick?
15-1 is Gervin.
Gervin, all right.
That'll change, though, Steve. You'll be okay.
Jake, got an interest in that?
Yeah, we'll do a dual pick with me and Mary. We'll do Patch. Why not?
Aw, nice.
Right, Patch is the one-eyed horse.
And how about a cool name for a horse that winds up having an eye removed named Patch?
Yeah.
Huh?
Has there been a one-legged derby winner? I like a one-legged fast-hopping derby winner.
There have been three-legged derby winners, but not one-legged.
Not one-legged?
Yeah, as
of
yet.
Fun. Be total fun.
There have been one-eyed horses in the derby before.
Is that right?
There were a couple of them, yeah.
Anybody make any money?
They didn't win. But
yeah.
I don't think it was because of the eye. Their legs weren't good enough, probably.
Yeah, there's more important.
There's rain in the forecast for
there
Saturday.
Is.
Is there any horse that runs better in the rain of these 20?
Yeah, that's another one of the variables that you're going to look
looking
at in there.
Looking for a mutter?
Yeah, I'm looking for a mutter.
Yeah, but, you know, there are some horses in here that might be.
Mutter?
They might be mutters and haven't run on it as of
hello,
yet.
Mutter.
So they're bred for it. So, you know, as soon as they get in the middle of the pack and they start getting mud kicked in their face, some of them just, you know, throw their tail up and say, that's it.
I'm out.
And then some of them just skip along and run better than ever. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. It's supposed to rain down. They're supposed to be nice here in Chicago, though, now,
beautiful.
Finally.
Which is a great reason to go to Arlington and a perfect segue to talk about the season. We only got a couple minutes here, but give me a preview.
Yeah, we're going to open up Friday. Tomorrow is opening day at Arlington. And if you buy your general admission ticket online and print it out, you get in free tomorrow. Kentucky Derby Party on Saturday. We will have mint juleps, obviously. We've got a live band, live music, all this stuff. This is the 90th 50th birthday of Arlington this year. It was born in 1927. It opened up, which makes it 5 years younger than our chairman, Richard Duchossois.
Who's doing great.
He's doing great.
Does he work every day?
He does. He does. I mean, you know,
you know Prince, he calls
the
Prince
Duke
Philip
of Edinburgh is retiring. Yes,
yeah.
He's retiring at 95, and Mr. D is not.
He's an amazing story.
Yes, he is.
You know, he calls honest, Big O. Youngster.
Kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brat.
He does. How is the Big O?
He's doing great.
Is he?
Yeah,
good.
He's recovering nicely.
Yeah, Mr. D is probably listening as we speak as he drives himself into work.
Yeah. He's, now, on top of all that, he's a war hero.
He is a war hero. He is that. There's no
legitimate,
question about it.
Bona fide war hero.
Yes.
And he won't go around telling you it, but if you ask him about it, he'll talk about all the guys he served with. I know that.
Oh, no question about it. He was, I think, went into the service, into the Army when he was like 19 years old. A war hero, was wounded severely overseas, fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And he didn't talk about it for a long time, like a lot of the veterans, because he'll tell you, you know, it's not like you see in the movies. You know, war is hell. It's not a pretty picture. But in the last few years, he's talked about it more. Which is nice because it really gives you a window into history.
Sure.
And talking to him, it's fascinating.
He was dead. He was declared dead. And if not for one of the corpsmen, I believe, who saw a wiggle finger or something, as the story goes, that's what allowed him to get the care he needed to survive.
Yeah, he celebrates
incredible life.
Two birthdays. He was put. He said that they took the wounded and they put him on each side of the hospital ward, and he was put on the side that you couldn't save. They couldn't be saved.
Right.
And somebody walked by and saw him wiggle his toe. They moved him to the other side. He recovered, and in 95, he's still going strong.
The rest is history.
Yeah,
he's
remarkable.
But he used to put bombs on tanks, right? He would crawl up on German tanks and blow them up.
Yeah,
he was real high risk.
He was a tank operator or what?
Or you would blow him up. I mean, he was
a tank bomber.
Bomber.
He's the only guy in the room that would have done that if he were here today. Yeah, none of us have. But that's why they call it the Greatest Generation. Howard Sudbury, always nice to see you. If we want information on Arlington, not just for the weekend, but all year long, go to the website.
ArlingtonPark.com. And I want to mention also the 35th Arlington Million is this year, and that comes up on August 12th. So it's going to be a fun season. People have been coming out for generations, and it's a beautiful place, as you know. And everybody's welcome.
And I say this every year, and I'll say it again. Go to Arlington. You are guaranteed to have a good time. It's a great family thing. It's great for a date, all of that. And we salute the Duchossois family. Mr. Duchossois could have shut this down years ago. He ain't making he's not printing money off of what goes on at Arlington. He's got no help from this state, nobody to back him up, and he continues to be an employer who pays a tremendous amount of taxes, keeps the Arlington folks in business. And he's a good man for doing it, because this has been a passion project, not a profit maker.
Yeah, when the track burned in 85, you know, he and his family decided that we owe it to the community, we owe it to the state as a center of tourism to rebuild this place, and he did it, and who knows what it cost, hundreds of millions of dollars that he sunk into it. It's beautiful. It's really his family's gift to Chicagoland.
It's amazing.
Because it's a special place.
Yeah, and we thank him for it. And thank you.
Nice. All right,
to see you,
buddy. Thank you, guys.
What's going on with the House and a vote on health care today? And do they care what you think? 724, back with that after this on 720 WGN. Mayor, Pat Brady's here. What's the name of your company, Pat?
Next Generation Strategies.
All right, so the Americans, what is it called? The American Care Health, American? I think it's called
Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, the Affordable, no, but no, the Republican version's got some new name.
It depends on who you're talking to. I think the Democrats call it Trump Care.
Yeah, that's it. Let's call it Trump Care. All right, so the vote is a surprise to a lot, but last night about 8 o'clock, they said, guess what? We're voting tomorrow. This is all political. This is so we can say we repealed and replaced, we the Republicans. It doesn't mean it's going to get through the Senate, but the provisions we're talking about in this bill, there's no Republican who can go, oh, this is great for everybody. It hasn't been scored by the CBO. It's got all sorts of hooks and ladders in it that can be very difficult. Is the political win now worth it because they're going to pay the price down the road?
Well, it'd be nice if some of the Democrats actually participated, but you're right. It's a lot of politics, and it's a promise that Republicans have made for years that they're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. I think it's going to have an uphill climb in the Senate, but the reality is the House needs to get something done. This will be seen as a huge victory politically for the president and probably help out some of these House members.
But the minute the president tweets something dopey, this is not your top news story again. So how long is the news cycle going to last on this?
It's about 12 minutes now, because I'm sure he will right afterwards. But there's going to be a 2-week break after this, and these legislators can go back to their districts and talk about repeal and replace Obamacare. So a promise made and delivered upon. And that's the political calculation. But it's got a real uphill climb to get through the Senate.
Why now? Why is it so important to do it right now? Because what we've been hearing since last night is if they don't do this now, they won't get a single piece of Trump legislation passed. Why would this not be able to be put off a little bit down the road, you know, do some building on it and get it right instead of putting a bad bill for it?
Well, you can always ask the question why they didn't start out with something that we talked about months ago, get something and get a win on both sides, like a big infrastructure bill. But once you've lost, the perception is you're not going to win anything. That's why I'm not sure if it's even accurate anymore with Trump, because they did lose and they teed it up again. It looks right. Like they're going to get it passed. But the perception is that the president can't get his agenda through, and then everything else kind of dies from there. But who knows? Maybe this will spur tax reform or a big infrastructure bill. But it is important to get a win on the board.
Important politically because of momentum?
Momentum, perception. You have a president with a 40% approval rating. We have a huge majority in the House. If we can't get it done, can Republicans, the argument is, get anything done?
So we're going to take a break, come back with the news, and we'll do more with Pat. And Eric Edelstein is traveling today. But before we leave this, for people who are getting up this morning going, hold on, what do you mean they're voting on it? What do you mean it's going to pass? What does this mean to me? If you see some of the breakdowns, because there is no CBO score on this, it's not good. We're talking about increased premium expenses when our major concerns were deductibles, but increased premium expenses on everything from asthma to kids with autism.
You're talking about the pre-existing condition. Yeah.
The pre-existing condition piece of this, where an additional $8 billion is supposedly folded into this. The states will still have an option to opt out. We tried high-risk pools under Obama. They weren't really effective.
Well, it's a little different. They aren't exactly what Obamacare was. I think there
but
is
anyway,
a
my question is this. People waking up, should they be scared about this? Or see what happens in the Senate before you start wasting time worrying?
It's a see what happens. We're a long way from this being law.
Thank you for that.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I love tough people. You need tough people, and he's a tough cookie.
Our people are pretty tough cookies.
Winston Churchill, tough cookie.
Real estate guys in New York and elsewhere, pretty tough cookies.
I mean, he's my father, but he's a tough cookie.
A tough cookie. These are tough cookies. Think of Putin. Pretty tough cookie, right?
He is one tough cookie.
Policemen that are tough, tough cookies.
Yeah, he's a tough cookie.
And he's a tough cookie.
That's a smart cookie. A tough cookie.
I respect Lyndon Johnson because he was one smart cookie.
Run by a very smart cookie. My volunteer is a smart cookie.
They are a bunch of dishonest cookies.
He is a tough cookie or something to that effect.
Cookie! Om, nom,
nom. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. I never heard a cookie described as dishonest before. What did you say?
Or something to that effect.
Or something to that effect.
I've eaten his dishonest cookie before. They're not very good.
No, because they're dishonest.
Right?
Yeah. 744, Pat Brady's here. We're talking politics. All right, so James Comey sits down yesterday, and he says, look, I had two doors I could have walked through. One door was talk about what the investigation is. The other is cover it up. I chose the door. I had to talk about it. I didn't like it. But I had to talk about it. And he even backed it up a little further and said all bets were off when Bill Clinton met on the plane with the attorney general at that point and created suspicion in the Justice Department like there hadn't been before that the fix was in.
Watched most of the hearing. I thought the FBI Director Comey did a nice job answering the questions about why he made the decision he did. And you can criticize him for doing it, but I don't think he did it intentionally to affect the election. You can argue it did have an effect on the election. Hillary Clinton the day before blamed her loss on what FBI Director Comey did. But the thing that's disturbing to me is the president taking off after the FBI director, which is not a good development for this country.
Why does he see that as a path he should take? I mean, since December, he has to have people in his inner circle going, don't do this.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. We've talked about it time and time again to have the president, I don't think fully understands the roles of the individual.
I mean, does he get that the FBI director works for him and protects the country?
Yes, and there's exactly. I don't understand.
And the rest of it is, you know, Comey had you could easily make the argument that Comey had a human reaction to what he should do behaviorally when it came to talking about Hillary Clinton last fall. That was part of the equation. Well, couldn't part of his human reaction also be if the president continues to dump on me, I'm going to continue to encourage my best people to find everything they can on him.
probably, I mean, I knew him back in the old days. He's a stand-up guy.
I think
he's a true public servant. But to me, the most interesting thing was he very rationally explained why he did what he did. And even said, he goes, I did not consider whether this impacted the election. That is not my job. But interesting to me, you learn more about the cesspool of the Clintons with that Uma, however you say it, Abedin.
Uma
was sending emails to Anthony Weiner. You talked about earlier the Weiner rule. I mean, this Clinton cesspool, I'm hoping someday there will be a 24-hour period where I do not have to hear from one Clinton.
You'd like a Clinton-free America for one day?
One day.
We had it for a few months.
No, we always had a Chelsea.
You'd have a Chelsea hit. You'd have a Bill hit. You're talking about all of them going into the woods.
Just for a day. We'll start with a day.
Just one day. Like get a cabin.
Yes.
Yeah, with no
tweets,
cell service.
Nothing.
Okay.
And then we'll go to a month, and maybe by the time you and I are dead, we'll go for a whole year.
What a lovely thought.
Something to look forward to for us.
The thing that Comey came away from that, and I think Comey's back today, right? They're not done with him yet?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But they got off script. They were asking questions that had on different areas of the law that had nothing to do with what they were supposed to.
I'm surprised he even said mildly nauseous. It was one of the first things he said during the testimony.
That's a tough decision. He's sitting there. Interesting to me.
And by the way, mildly nauseous applied to whether or not he was the guy that elected Donald Trump.
Right.
That's exactly what he meant.
Probably. Yeah. But to me, more interestingly, was the fact that Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch during the same time and cast suspicions on the Justice Department that they could be objective in their decision of whether or not to actually prosecute Hillary Clinton.
Well, from a prosecutor's standpoint, putting yourself in Comey's shoes and what he did and what he had to do, how much of it was protecting his own butt?
Well, here's the thing. He's not a prosecutor. He's the FBI. They're the police in these investigations. The decision whether to go forward with the prosecution is up to the Justice Department. When I was in the Justice Department, the FBI brought me cases. We made a legal decision on the whether that met.
But he sort of stepped into those shoes in that press conference.
And we've been saying this for 2 years. I don't understand how an FBI director gets out publicly and says, we are not going to prosecute. That's not your decision.
Right.
Now, yesterday he explained it, that the credibility of the Justice Department had been put into suspicion because of the meeting on the tarmac.
It just felt to me a little bit like, because I like Comey, but it felt to me like he was over his skis a bit. Like
he
got out over his skis and he couldn't get it back.
If he felt that way, he should have gone over to the Justice Department, had an off-the-record meeting with Loretta Lynch, say, listen, this meeting looks really bad. I need to do this, not just do it on his own. So that, as much as I like him and respect him, I don't understand that.
And
I'm sure that decision came off, or the testimony came off for a while.
And the timing was so questionable, too. 2 weeks or a week before the election.
Well, once again, that's your Weiner effect.
Yeah. Well, I think the trick bag he's in, too, is not just the timing, but the fact that they had an investigation of the Trump campaign into the Russia connections that wasn't disclosed.
Right.
He gave a good explanation for it, but I think the harder pitch is that there were two investigations going on.
Well, part of the problem and the reason that the Trump thing hadn't moved along any quicker is because the White House was aware of it. President Obama did nothing with it because President Obama didn't want to be seen to interfere with an election. Mm-hmm. So President Obama's choice is part and parcel to why Comey was in the position he was in.
Listen, the whole argument yesterday is, did this affect the election? I think David Axelrod, the Democrat consultant, said, nobody told Hillary Clinton not to campaign in Wisconsin, and she blew this campaign.
Right.
And Comey, what he did may have had an impact, but it wasn't decisive.
I'd also advise Hillary Clinton, if she does choose to stay out of the woods and continue to make public appearances, that she include this line. If I hadn't done the stupid thing with the email, we wouldn't have to be talking about this.
Yeah, no, she has to acknowledge that, absolutely.
Because America likes an apology.
Yeah.
And by the way, you don't get to do it just once.
She did say to Christiane Amanpour, at first, before she went into all the other, side notes, she did say, we could have done better with this campaign. This was not the
I watched it, and the more I watched her, the more I realized this really, and I'm sorry, people that like her, support her, she was just a terrible retail political candidate, and she was just equally bad the day before yesterday, and that's why they lost the arrogance, the Clinton Foundation, the perception that they cannot tell the truth, perception a lot of which is reality. It killed him, and that's why I disliked it. Just get him off the stage.
You said from the beginning, regardless of your Republicanness, that's a word, by the way, your Republicanness.
Yeah.
You said from the beginning, and it remains true to this day, why do you want to be president, Hillary Clinton? And she still can't answer the question.
Donald Trump, as much as goofy as it was, make America great again, you can remember, you give me one reason why Hillary Clinton ran for president other than go look at my website. We saw it in Iowa. I remember three of us were there, and she starts giving her speech. She goes, go to my website. I'm like, no, I don't want to go to your website.
Right.
I want to hear you
tell me
say
how.
This is the first week of the formal campaign.
That's right, yeah.
So really, it's
February.
It could be a little James Comey's fault. It could be Hillary Clinton's fault. There's a lot of people to blame for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big board. We'll come back. You got to fill me in on Springfield a little bit because the governor's race is already getting some traction. Oh, and by the way, we still don't have a budget. You know what that means. Here on show number 897, no Madigan. We're Mike Madigan free. Mike Madigan, once again, not appearing, which means the seventh caller now wins something off the prize list. When Madigan doesn't show up, you're a big winner. Pat Brady's here. Let's talk about Springfield for a second. You spend a fair amount of time there. Why are we talking about the governor's race so much already when we still don't have a budget?
Yeah, Democrats are off and running. And Madigan's candidate, J.B. Pritzker, through Madigan, lined up some big labor union endorsements tomorrow. And so, or yesterday, excuse me. So it's J.B. Pritzker, multi-billionaire, Chris Kennedy.
Why does J.B. Pritzker need Mike Madigan?
Because you can't win without Mike Madigan.
As a Democrat in the primary, you cannot win. Yeah.
So Madigan's orchestrating his election, getting the labor endorsements. And the interesting thing from the political side to watch is that one of the other guys in the race, Senator Dan Biss, said the same thing I'm saying, that Madigan's orchestrating all these labor endorsements. So we're going to have probably J.B. Pritzker or maybe Chris Kennedy come out of the primary to run against the governor.
So Chris Kennedy, both J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy have plenty of money, and they could do it on their own. But Chris Kennedy is not Mike Madigan's candidate. What does that mean for Chris Kennedy?
I know he's very popular, and Eric actually works for him, and so he's smart enough to hire great people. But he's very popular with the county chairman, and I think the Kennedy legacy, I think, is still somewhat popular with the African-American community, which is a big block in the Democrat primary.
So he is not, you know, completely out of luck because Madigan hasn't chosen him.
No, and I think.
And by the way, how does Madigan choose?
I'm not sure. You know, I don't get invited to the family dinners anymore. But
you know, it's funny. Neither do I.
But just read the tea leaves. All these labor endorsements are lined up behind J.B. Pritzker. And to me, he put out his first ads this week, and it's an inherited money and inherited success. It's just a third generation billionaire that's telling us in the state how we need to run things, and all he's ever talked about is a tax increase. We have no plans. It's all about a tax increase.
Yeah, and by the way, any labor organization leader who wants to come in here and look me in the eye and tell me you're not told by Mike Madigan what to do, you're welcome to come in.
But I think we have to distinguish, though, between the government public sector union leadership and the trades. I think the trades should be naturally with the Republicans because we're actually going to create jobs. So I'm a little – I don't quite understand why the trades come out so early for J.B. Pritzker, but the public sector unions, that funds the Democratic Party along with the trial lawyers.
Yes, and the trial lawyers, which is this much of a sliver of the state controlling what they control because it's Madigan's pet thing, is outrageous. Mike Madigan, once again, Mike Madigan has no interest in you as a taxpaying citizen in Illinois. Zero. His only interest is to maintain his fiefdom as Mike Madigan and to never be accountable for it. That's what he does when he gets up in the morning. That's what he does when he works during the day. And that's what he thinks about when he goes to bed at night. And again, the speaker is welcome here anytime to refute anything I've said.
And J.B. Pritzker may refute this too, but if you're going to put a handpicked Madigan candidate in the Democrat and win the Democratic primary, then potentially be governor, what's going to change? And I think the state's crying out for change.
Yeah, which is, again, brings us full circle back to Rauner. As much as I dislike Trump and as much as I dislike Madigan, I don't care how much in the middle that puts me, I can tell you right now, the only way to run government is to not run government the way it's being run federally or being run locally. And the fact is, Governor Rauner, I don't care if you hate Governor Rauner, if you can legitimately, calmly look at the reforms he's suggesting and tell me why they don't work, great. I'd love to hear the explanation. Because I've looked at him a million times, and what he's asking for is minimal. And for everybody that goes, we just need to make a deal, well, then we're right back to put your name governor here, because that means nothing changed, and everything we've gone through means nothing. It's all pointless. The people that have gone out of business because they're not getting paid, everybody that's suffered during this period, all of their suffering means nothing, because nothing will change.
I agree, and that's the, you know, the calculation you have to make as a Democrat if you want to support a Madigan sanctioned candidate.
So who's our big winner? Jennifer gets an apt gift card from aptelectronicsabt.com for playing the Madigan game. Remember, when you hear crickets, that means nobody's home, and Mike Madigan again is too gutless to come in and talk to me. Pat Brady, nice to see you, my friend.
Always. I think we need to play golf for Mother's Day.
There you go.
Yeah.
All Pat wants for
Mother's Day. That's
what
our mothers, wherever they are, truly want us to do.
Right.
All day. Start at 8 and finish at 7.
Somebody's got to commit to it.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I was dreaming when I wrote this.
Forgive me if it goes astray. Dean's tied up doing something. Do we know what Dean's doing?
What Dean's doing. Is he on location?
Yeah,
he
let's say that.
Location.
It sounds fancier.
Yeah.
Dean's on location. Andrea has your show business. What's up with Prince?
Well, we all love Prince. 1 year ago, we lost Prince.
Was it a year ago today?
Was a year ago in April. Year ago in April.
Oh, so just the year, the little past year.
It just passed. Now, he has a bunch of songs that he recorded. You've been to Paisley Park. There's a whole vault full of songs.
Yep, I saw the vault.
His producers, did you see the vault?
I'm not kidding. There was a vault, and it was sort of mythical, because there was a vault. This is back in the early 90s now, when I used to be there quite a bit. And there was a vault that had almost like a comical lock on it, and it was supposedly where all of Prince's musical riffs were, pieces were, unfinished songs, and everything else. Back then, a lot of it was on tape.
Yeah, tape. That would be a cassette tape, kids.
Well, you know, those big listening reels and things.
Sure, the 8-tracks and everything. Well, he's supposed to, his producers wanted to release the Deliverance EP. This song has been going on for months and months and months. They wanted to release this EP. It's called Deliverance, and his estate says no, they don't want it to be released. Now, it went to the courts. A judge said if the family doesn't want this music released, they're going to have to pay $1 million to prevent all of this new music from being released. I don't know why they want it to be not be released, but if they want to continue not having it released,
why do they have to pay
$1 million?
Not released because
it's
someone
strange,
else owns the music?
Exactly, yeah. So what happens is the producers and a couple of his sound mixers have these, and they don't want them to release them. But it's supposed to be 6 brand new Prince songs that were recorded sometime between 2006 and 2008 with his recording engineer.
Well, he worked, and again, my knowledge base here is 25 years old, so you take it with that grain of salt. But he worked with people all the time, and he saved everything. So there was always stuff that wasn't getting put out, and the running deal was, and his people said this too, said Prince has more hits in that room, the vault, than anyone in history, and most of them will never be heard.
I don't see a reason for why they wouldn't want that music released. Why keep it hidden? Why keep it in the vault?
Prince legacy, maybe?
I guess so. They have to pay by May 12th. Otherwise, it'll be released.
Okay.
So we just have another week or so until we find out if it's going to be released. All right, Brad Pitt news. Why did he leave Angelina, or did Angelina leave him? Back and forth, and
forth. Yeah, this thing where he was supposedly drunk on the plane?
Yeah, this is where he was drunk on the plane. He did admit to it. He said he did get physical and very verbally abusive with his son, Maddox.
He admitted he shoved the kid?
He admitted that he pushed him. He said he was not himself. He had been drinking like crazy. He's in therapy now. He said he doesn't remember a day in his life since he was in college, for I think he was in college a year or so in Missouri, that he wasn't drinking or smoking pot.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he's finally quit drinking. He says now he's drinking cranberry juice.
That's rather amazing to think he could work at the level he worked at and succeed at the level he succeeded at if he was that much of a lush.
And raise 6 kids.
Well,
did you see recent pictures of him?
How much of the raising did he have something to do with him? Yeah, what do you mean?
He just doesn't, he looks really, I don't know.
He looks like he's aging?
Yes, he just all of a sudden has a lot of lines and wrinkles.
I hate to break it to you, he's 52 years old or whatever.
Not my Brad Pitt.
People have said that he was described as gaunt, and that's when he realized that, you know what, he can't be boozing every day, can't be drinking. He says he's in therapy, he's seeing 2 different therapists.
Jake, look up, how old is Brad Pitt? Is it 52?
He's 52, yeah. I think
he is. 52, he ought to look older.
He looks great, though, but he
looks
said...
Looks worse when he's not drinking.
He said he was completely floored, though. Angelina Jolie filed for divorce 5 days after this plane incident.
53.
And he was completely floored that DCFS called and was looking into this.
Because he was drunk. He didn't expect it.
Yeah, he didn't think that what he did disciplining his son and getting into like a pushing match with the kid was enough to warrant DCFS.
Reading
calling.
Between the lines, which is unfair, but reading between the lines and assessing what Brad Pitt is saying in this GQ interview, that Angelina Jolie maybe did the right thing for her.
It seems so. It said, and strangely too, he was talking about her throughout the interview, but he only mentioned her by name 1 time. And it was to promote a new film. He said, well, you should go see Angie's film. But everything else was she and her. strange, just a little interesting. Divorce. Yeah, exactly. So hopefully they can work something out. And we have a Liam Neeson story for you. This is kind of a cute story. He was in Canada. He's filming a movie in Vancouver. So there's a Big Star sandwich shop. They really are trying to get Liam Neeson into the store. So they wrote a little marquee on the outside on chalk, one of those chalkboards. And it says, Liam Neeson eats here for free, hoping that he would come and visit them.
Did he show up?
He absolutely did.
Oh, that's funny.
They were so excited. He didn't buy a sandwich, but he did pose for a picture, and they put on Facebook, holy, it worked, # Liam Neeson.
So he came in, but he didn't eat anything?
No, he just wanted to come in. He saw the sign that said Liam Neeson eats here for free and thought he would swing by.
And he didn't make him take the sign down?
No, he let him keep it up, and they took a picture. It's kind of a cute little story.
Well, that's funny. That's funny. All right, I want to talk about this Colbert thing. So a couple of nights ago, Colbert's ratings were not good, and he was in trouble and possibly losing the show until last summer, mm-hmm. when he found his voice, and his voice being to go back to at least a piece of what he did on Comedy Central, which is politics, and a lot of it, and he started ripping Trump every night.
Right.
Because you got to remember, 60% of the country, 55 to be generous, didn't vote for Donald Trump, doesn't want him to be president. That's a large chunk of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So he has been consistently beating Fallon in late night. Now, what happens is you get a little bit of a roll going, and maybe you push it too far. He probably did in his monologue, but you can decide. Here's the clip.
You have more people marching against you than cancer. You talk like a sign language gorilla who got hit in the head. In fact, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Vladimir Putin's holster.
Now, he says it live in the room, see blank holster.
Blank holster,
obviously,
yeah.
It's bleeped on TV at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But people claimed that it was homophobic.
You know, I didn't hear it until we played it. I mean, I didn't hear it as it was actually happening. I heard the clip being played yesterday. There's no way.
I don't get how it's homophobic.
Did you think that at all?
No, because the joke is about, listen, the worst thing you can do is stop down with a joke and go, let's break this down.
Yeah.
But if you really stop down and break this down, what it comes down to is, yes, he is saying there was a sex act between two men. But
that doesn't make either of them, it's not anti-gay.
It doesn't make it anti-gay or homophobic. It makes it probably stupid for someone in his position to go that far over the line.
Right.
He sort of apologized for. Here's the clip.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Still? Am I still the host? I'm still the host! Folks, if you saw my monologue on Monday, you know that I was a little upset with Donald Trump for insulting a friend of mine. So, at the end of that monologue, I had a few choice insults for the president in return. I don't regret that. I believe he can take care of himself. I have jokes. He has the launch codes. So, it's a fair fight. So while I would do it again, I would change a few words that were cruder than they needed to be. Now, I'm not going to repeat the phrase, but I just want to say, for the record, life is short. And anyone who expresses their love for another person in their own way is, to me, an American hero. And I think we can all agree on that. I hope even the president and I can agree on that. Nothing else but that.
That's Colbert sort of apologizing, yeah. Sort of not. Listen, I think he's doing a fine job. I wouldn't have done the joke, but, you know, recently I may have gotten in trouble for a joke. So, you know, you take your punishment, you move on. It doesn't mean the person who claimed to be offended was right. It means you do the right thing in the moment and say you're sorry for something you may not have done in the way you intended it to be done.
That's a great way to put it.
Come back and we'll talk to Paul Coit. There's big news in England this morning. Nice job by you, filling in for Dean. This formal-sounding, snooty British music is because our friend Paul Coit's on the phone, live from London. Well, we have London news, Paul.
We really do. But firstly, that, of all the years I've known you, is the finest royal fanfare I have ever heard. So thank you and congratulations.
I have to give credit to Mike Jacobson. He picked it out. You know, I would have picked out something that was mock-worthy. He actually
is. Yeah, your one's usually a bit more like Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. That's more proper royal.
Yes, always recognized to be so. All right, first off, Prince William at 95 apparently made 207 appearances last year. 207. That makes me tired just thinking about it.
It's not bad going, is it? He's patron, I think it's of 78, about 78 different charities and different things that he has to do and different places he has to visit. And so he's 95 years old. And I don't know whether you got into the fever of something big has happened, something terrible has happened. There was stories all over Twitter saying that all the staff from all the royal households were going to have to meet at Buckingham Palace. They had buses taking all the staff there for a meeting at 10 o'clock for a big summit. So we're all thinking, well, you know what we're thinking. Someone's gone. Something's happened.
Yeah, Chuck might somebody died.
Well, that's what I was saying. But, you know, I don't want to speak too disrespectful. But, yes, the Queen may have popped her clogs. So then we're waiting for the news. We're waiting for the news. And it's probably the biggest royal anticlimax is that Prince Philip is retiring. This is what we've been waiting all morning for.
Right.
He's 95, so that's it. That's why everybody was summoned down. Well, they couldn't just email people. I have no idea. But then again, it's the royal family.
Let's back this up for a second. What was the phrase you just used?
I have no idea. Pop her clogs? Was that it?
Pop their clogs.
Popped her clog. Please tell me that's not a crazy English phrase.
Never,
are you not familiar with that one?
Never heard it in my life until now. I love it. She could have popped her clogs.
I think it goes back to Queen Beatrice of the Netherlands back in 1756 when she literally did pop her clogs, and then everybody's used it ever since.
The Queen is in good health. The Prince is in good health.
Yes.
He's just tired. He's tired. Yeah. He's 95.
He was tired in 1963. You know, you think, surely now, just give the guy a rest. It's 30 years after when most people actually retire. And he was opening a new part of a cricket stadium yesterday in London, still doing his thing and fine. And it's, but the thing is, it's 6 months, so it's not going to happen for 6 months. So any event, Steve, that you may have, maybe a little pro-am that might be going on, if you want him to make an official, you know, visit or cut a ribbon or something, do it now because you only got 6 months. And then
well, that's what's funny to me. He's 95. He ought to retire today. It should be done today, not 6 months from now.
It's a bit like when people go, we're celebrating today. Why? Because we're getting engaged in 3 years. It's like getting engaged means you're going to get married. So why get engaged to get engaged? It's like, well, just say now. That's it. I'm done.
Now.
You know, why? Why do we have to hang on?
For years, I've asked you the following question. When does Chuck get the hat?
Well, the first time you asked me this, I honestly think was over 20 years ago. And you said, when will Chuck get the hat? All I can say right now is it's probably closer now than it was the last time we spoke.
Yes, that's very true, and way to go out on a limb. But will he now step into Prince Philip's shoes, and will he have to accompany Mummy everywhere and be the guy standing near her when ribbons are cut and plaques are installed?
Well, no, because there are applications for that, which I want to say I'm actually applying for that job. All I will have to do is just stand alongside, and I don't think I'm tall enough, but that's what you do. You just walk alongside the Queen and nod. And
wave occasionally, the royal stander. You'd be good at that. You'd be super good at that.
I think, well, this is what I was thinking. I'm not just blowing my own trumpet, but I think I'd be particularly good at doing such a thing.
Now, when I, and by the way, if you can blow your own trumpet, you've been doing a lot of yoga.
Is that two phrases now I've done already?
Yes, that's exactly right.
I'm going for the hat trick.
All right, so here's the deal. I watch a lot of history, and I'm fascinated by your country's history because without your country, we don't have ours. But the fact of the matter is, Prince Philip initially, as I understand it, wasn't very comfortable being the guy in the background. Keep in mind that he and the Queen have been married for 114 years, and they were married at a time when you know, women didn't work and certainly weren't leading their husbands around.
Exactly.
And he wasn't very pleased with that. So over the course of his time, he has said some things that have gotten him into trouble. And Andrea has a list that's, I don't know, it's 500 things long.
48 of his top ones from the Telegraph.
Yeah, so...
Can you do these, though, in an English accent, though, because so they have a little more gravitas?
No.
I really appreciate that.
I don't know.
What if I say it and then you can repeat it?
Yeah, there you go.
How's that?
Okay. All right, what's number five?
All right, number five.
Things Prince Philip said.
Things Prince Philip has said. In Britain in 1966, British women can't cook.
Paul?
Is that it?
That's it. British women can't cook.
British women can't cook.
Yeah, see, it's more offensive when Paul does it.
Right.
Number four.
This is what he said to Tom Jones after the 1969 Royal Variety performance. What do you gargle with? Pebbles?
Wow.
What do you gargle with? What?
Pebbles.
Pebbles.
What do you gargle with? Pebbles?
See, there's an insult to it. There's an insult... There's an intonation of insult with Paul that really can't be done.
Then in 1988, he outdid himself when he saw plans for the Duke and Duchess of York's bedroom and their summer home. He said, it looks like a tart's bedroom.
Oh, boy. All right, give me a little of that.
Like a what bed? I didn't even know it looked like a what bedroom?
A tart's bedroom.
Oh, my goodness me. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
God, I'm going to fill this... It looks like a tart's bedroom.
Oh, so I see. You see what he did there? He sort of did it half under his breath, like he was talking to me standing next to him. Number two.
You know what? It's a truly getting character.
Well, number two, there's a tie. This was to British students in China during a 1986 state visit. To British students in China. If you stay here much longer, you'll all be slitty-eyed.
That's nice, isn't it? That's nice. If you stay here long enough, you'll all be slitty-eyed.
Again. Oh, and he tagged it with the British laugh. Very
Thank
nice.
Thank you very much. Not, I'm going again, full out for number one.
Not to be outdone, this is to a Brit in Budapest, Hungary in 1993. You can't have been there that long. You've got a pot belly.
Goodness me. Excuse me. You can't have been there that long. You've got a pot belly.
No laugh for that
good.
One.
That was very serious.
Okay. And this is number one, you're right?
Actually, it was a raise of my eyebrow, which doesn't really come across on radio so well.
I can tell.
This is number one. Muttered at the Royal Variety performance as he watched Sir Elton John perform in 2001, I wish he'd turn that microphone off.
Oh, to Elton?
I think that would be probably someone saying, I wish he'd turn that microphone off.
And that's when the Queen hit him and told him to wait in the car.
Punched him full in the face. That's exactly what happened.
Thank you, Paul, for the information. The people of the UK can rest easy. The Queen is fine. The Prince needs to put his feet up in 6 months.
Exactly.
All right.
It'll be a busy 6 months.
Go Spurs. Only a few days left.
Not the Spurs.
I love that that's the response. Ah.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, and a terrorist who's responsible for the murder of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. It was nearly 10 years ago that a bright September day was darkened by the worst attack on the American people in our history. The images of 9/11 are seared into our national memory.
Rob O'Neill was there. Navy SEAL of extraordinary experience. The Forrest Gump of Navy SEALs with all the high-profile missions that he was on. And his new book details much of it, The Operator, out and available now. And we welcome our friend Rob back to the program. Good morning, Mr. O'Neill.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you coming back. Marcus Luttrell, lone survivor, Captain Richard Phillips. You know, these are true-to-life stories that were made into movies, as was the Bin Laden story. You were at all of them. That's why your buddies called you Forrest Gump, right?
Yeah, they made fun of me, Forrest Gump, just saying that I found myself in these spots, but I couldn't run very fast. we found ourselves there. A lot of it was locked. I mean, we got to the spot where we were because of, you know, very, very hard work, never quit attitude. But then my team happened to be there for all of those. We were in Afghanistan when the lone survivor and his team were ambushed, and a helicopter went in after them and was shot down. They killed 20 Americans on the helicopter, 3 SEALs on the ground. We went in as a coalition. It wasn't just me, obviously. It was a lot of my team, a lot of Marines and Rangers, a coalition. But we grabbed the trail out of a village after staying awake for 2.5 days, I think. And that was one of the points, too, where we were like, this is why training is so hard, because if we wanted to quit now, where are we going to go? Because you're just here. You just have to understand. And then another one, I was actually celebrating my birthday with my daughter at her preschool on Good Friday, April 10th, 2009, and we got a call that Captain Richard Phillips had been taken by Somali pirates, and they needed us to go get him. And so in between a kiss on my daughter's 4-year-old forehead and the time we were in the Indian Ocean was less than 16 hours. And then our snipers took some shots a day and a half later on Easter Sunday, and we rescued Richard Phillips. And then a lot of the same guys on that mission were called. We just gotten back from a deployment to Afghanistan, a combat deployment. And a couple of weeks later, they pulled 23 of us aside and told us we had a mission. It turned out to be the Bin Laden mission. So it's just, you know, we were on that team for a number of reasons, but it's incredible people.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to ask you about the Bin Laden things. In particular, last time we talked, we didn't have time to get into it in too much detail, and you lay it out in a really dramatic fashion. You paint the picture incredibly in the book, The Operator. But let me back up for a second. So whether it's Luttrell or Captain Phillips, when you are home with your family and you get the call that you have to go back to work, we've all had that situation. Honey, I've got to go to work. What do you say to your family?
That's what I would say to them, and my kids were so clever about it that they would say, Dad's going to work, which meant I could be gone for a day or up to a few weeks. But if they would say, Dad's going to dumb old work, they knew it was going to war. And that's just how they accepted it. And they're smart. They still know what happened. And they're really good at compartmentalizing it, too. They don't dwell on anything and they don't talk about it. It's part of the unique community of especially Navy SEALs. Everyone's involved. The families are involved. The wives are involved. The kids all know each other. You know, you have the barbecues. You help each other with the yard work.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the Navy SEAL summer picnic is cool. All right. So let's go back inside the Abbottabad compound. The helicopter's down. You've lost one chopper. You know that you're in the right spot because, as you write in the book, you blow up one door and you see there's a second door behind it, and that was the key, right? Like it was a reinforced door?
Well, it wasn't even a door behind it. It was another brick wall. They put the door there just to look like it had another entryway. We didn't know that from the air, and we couldn't see it from the imagery. But once it went off, at first it's like, well, this sucks. But then it's like, no, this doesn't suck. This is good. This, someone important is in there. If it's not Bin Laden, it's someone, because they're putting fake stuff out here just to try to throw people off. So and we didn't know that the other helicopter crashed. We thought it went somewhere else to come back, like it took fire. And we said we were going to blow the other door, which is a couple hundred feet away. And they just said, no, don't blow it. We'll open it. And they opened it, and a thumbs up came out. It's like, it's one of those moments, like these missions go so fast. It's like, okay, something happened. I don't need to worry about why it just happened. We'll talk about it later.
Right.
I was thinking, okay, our guys are in there, and I'm not going to ask them how they got there. They're just there, so we'll talk about it if we live, that kind of thing. And then we just went in that way.
But you paint the story, too, in the book where you talk about once you're in, the adrenaline's pumping. You've been in that position before. You don't know if you're coming home or not, but you seem to say – and I don't want to put words in your mouth or in your book, but you seem to say, I don't know if I'm coming back alive, but I know we're going to get this mission done. And at that point, you were pretty sure you had Bin Laden, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we had it, because going in, we didn't know what kind of goofy escape mechanisms he might have. But just based on where we were, who we put outside, now we knew our guys were inside, and I was inside. He was cornered in there. I was thinking he's going to go in, and once we all get enough of us in there, he's going to blow his entire house up and kill everybody inside. That's believe it or not, a tactic some of these fanatics will use.
Right.
So, I mean, even when we go in and clear the room, what you do next is like you look up to the ceiling and see if anything's suspended, like by a cord or something, because that's normally how they'll put explosives in there. It'll take the structure down. And we didn't see that, and we saw a lot of kids and family members, and then we just. And knowing the building would come down, and in this position I was sort of in the back, I was able to watch my guys work. And the two words that I can describe were cool and proud, because they were so cool that they were just doing everything the way they do. They weren't stressed or panicking, you know, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And I was so proud of the way they were working. If a door was barricaded, they'd get it open just by escalating the force of the type of breaching from, kicking to mechanical, which is like a tool or a hammer, and then explosive. And it just kept growing, and I was in the back, and I just knew that eventually I would get up with them, and that's just how we moved through the whole house, and it was great.
Rob, two quick questions for you about the Bin Laden mission. First of all, the photos, again, that we saw the war room and President Obama and then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton watching that. Do you realize that they're all watching you, and then this is going to be huge at that point? I mean, do you know, did they say, all right, the president's watching you? Do you know all of that, when that's going on?
We knew they were getting a relayed play-by-play from the commander on the ground to our admiral in Afghanistan over to a couple places in Washington. We were assuming they saw the helicopter crash, so we were just wondering how that conversation was going, because we knew everyone was okay, but they didn't. And it turns out that the admiral running the mission, Admiral McCraven, even though he didn't know what happened with the helicopter, he just told them, hey, look, there's obviously been a contingency, but my guys are ready for this, so don't worry. And the reason he said that was he knew regardless of what happened, having the Situation Room in the West Wing freak out is not going to help anybody. So he just calmed them down by just telling them what he hoped was happening.
Yeah, and I suppose you can't think the president's watching me. I better get this right, because you got a mission to accomplish. I don't want to give away the moment when you fire these shots, because I want people to read it in the book. However, there's a point in the movie, and there's a point we've heard in other accounts, where you guys are headed upstairs, single file, I believe, right? Navy SEAL single file.
Uh-huh.
And Bin Laden's son is in a room upstairs, and one of your guys, maybe it was you, is smart enough, if legend is true, to say the son's name, and he pops his head out, which was the end of him.
What happened was the intelligence analysts, who still, even though they made a movie about some of them and one woman in particular, still don't get enough credit, because they're the reason this happened.
Right.
They told us 2 weeks ago. We're the people that break doors down that will go do it. But she told us, I don't know the layout of the house, but somewhere is going to be a stairwell, and on that stairwell between the first and third floor, you will run into Khalid Bin Laden. And when you do, he'll be armed. And just remember, he's Osama's last line of defense. So when we were going up the stairs, the first set, I wasn't in a spot to do anything, but I could see it. And the point man and he were, you got to figure, two grown men with guns that want to kill each other, separated by about 10 inches. And it was dark and it was quiet. And he whispered his name and said, come here, in two different languages that Khalid spoke. And Khalid was confused and he looked and he got shot. And when that happened, I saw it. My first thought was, wow, I never would have thought of that. That was brilliant, just a brilliant tactical move. And second was, man, I hope we live through tonight, because people need to know what this guy just did. That was just brilliant.
Yeah.
And these are the kind of people that's why I say pride. I mean, these are the kind of people that are fighting for us. It's amazing people.
And we take you to the front door of Bin Laden's bedroom and beyond. Rob O'Neill will be back with us, because he's a phenomenal guest. And he's got a lot more to say about politics and the military and his new life and whatever. But I can tell you, I don't know what you do if you're a friend of Rob's when he comes back and he goes, dude, let's go have some fun. How do you top what he's already done?
Right.
What does Rob O'Neill do for excitement? Good God, man. Again, the book is called The Operator, out and available everywhere. Congratulations. Always appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. Let's do it again.
All right, thanks.
The Steve Cochran Show.
King in the castle. Have a chair. I have a chair. King in the castle.
Big Bad John. This kind of brings back frightening memories for me, because this is some of the crap my father used to play when I was a kid.
You're going to make fun of me now?
He didn't sing. No, but was your dad a country music fan?
No. My mom and dad were more Johnny Mathis, Frank Sinatra.
Okay. My dad liked the old school country music.
Hey, there goes the Wiener.
The Wienermobile.
What are we, in third grade here?
We are so 80.
Everybody goes, oh, the Wienermobile.
Listen, I know you don't have 17 people on your show, but there is more ADD on this show than anywhere else. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Dave pointed it out to all of us. I'm a little surprised. Thank you for that, Dave.
So what I was saying was, my father used to love terrible old school country music.
Right.
Like Ernest Tubbs, Walking the Floor Over You, or the original Hank Williams Jr. So that's all I heard as a kid. And every Saturday night was Hee Haw. But that song, Big John, Big Bad John. I heard a lot of that as a kid, too.
North to Alaska.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you ever play country music? Were you ever a country music DJ?
I was a DJ. I was a really bad DJ. I was playing Whitney Houston and Heart and the Eagles. Yeah. and stuff like that.
And was that in Peoria or before Peoria?
It was in Peoria. Yeah.
But Peoria ended up doing a talk show, right?
Yeah, for about just under a year, I was a DJ there. So it was like three in a row, jingle, couple more in a row. And inside, the heart of a talk show host was beating.
Yeah.
So I would start to, you know how you talk over the ramp and hit the post?
Yeah.
I would talk way more than the time that was allowed. It'd be like an 18-second ramp up to
you do a minute and a half.
I do a minute and a half. I take some calls over an Eagles song.
Yeah, and somewhere every program director I ever worked for is going, yeah, him too. It's 9:12. I wanted John Williams to come in this morning and say hi because I want to make sure you all know that he's back.
1 to 3.
1 to 3 every single day. And Saturday's when?
10 to noon.
Now, you and I were talking about something that is funny because if you're not going to laugh, you're going to cry off the air. Ross Cochran used to work on this show.
Yeah, he did.
And your son works for you on Saturdays.
He produces the show and has a live mic.
Right. And there was a consideration. You got a great producer for your 1 to 3 show.
Elif Garris.
Elif is tremendous. Yeah. But there are several people in consideration for the job.
Yep.
And John rightly thought, well, my son.
I said, Griff, let's go.
And what did Griff say?
No, thank you.
And you know what?
Why are you laughing?
He's a very good producer.
I broke my heart a little bit.
Well, you know what? It's like when Ross said, you know what? David Hochberg offered me a job. I'm going to leave. I'm going, wait a minute, but we're working together.
Yeah. How could you leave me? This is awesome.
And Ross is, and I bought him a T-shirt that said this. Ross actually came up with the following slogan, which I think applies not just to me, but to most people who do this. It's hard to work for you. It's hard to work for you when I have to work with you. That's it. Which I thought was very deep and profound. He said it as he was leaving one day with Hochberg.
Right. And then we never.
To a Bulls game in the suite or something.
And then
like
we
that.
Never saw him again.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah. So I get it. I understand your pain. So I'm not laughing. I'm laughing with you, not at you.
I'm not laughing with me yet. That's the problem.
So, but he is still doing the Saturday show.
Yeah, he does. And like I said, he has a live mic. And to be honest with you, I think Griff's skills are more on the air than off the air. He's not as super organized as you want a producer to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking on the other
like
side of
Sandberg,
your glass here.
Sandberg, yeah.
And they seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
If it was up to me and Griff, we would be in the wrong studio half the show.
Sandberg and Jake are great. They're really tremendous, and they're two very different people. But then again, who could be like Sandberg? but yeah, when Kevin Powell and Ross were producing the show, you really never quite knew what you were getting.
I don't know what that means. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
And I used to have conversations with the back of their heads regularly. You know, we'd sit in the office afterwards, and I don't know if this happened with you, but you sit in the office and you go, listen, even though you're a millennial, I'm going to need a little eye contact.
I'm not on the phone. I'm right here.
So what's the best part about being back?
Best part about being back, well, for one thing, since I was doing the show for a while in Minnesota, you know, we had a hookup in my basement there. And by that, I mean we had a microphone with a cord.
Yeah. That should be explained.
It's good to be back in the room. Eye contact, just literally when you're talking to people, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
It's so much better
right.
when you're seeing your on-air staff and your off-air staff. So that's one thing. There's also just, I know it sounds cliche because we've been saying it for a few years now, but there's just such positive juju in the halls here. It's a fun place to work. In fact, I don't know if this is true for you. It's hard to get work done here sometimes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
There's
true.
Way too much visiting going on.
Well, especially the way you do it, because you've always been a guy that comes in several hours early and does it that way. And if you leave your door open, there's going to be people who drop in. Now, in our case, we leave the door closed, and there's people who drop in.
I had a speaking engagement last Friday, and a friend of mine said, do you have time for lunch? I said, no, I have to work. I have a meeting. We're going axe throwing, and then I have the speaking engagement.
Right.
She's like, I love your life.
And I like that the fact that management here calls it collaboration. I love that.
Oh, is that the phrase that we use?
Collaboration.
Like axe throwing?
When you have a creative meeting, you decide what your next event's going
to
be.
Well, but also the collaboration goes to the closed doors mean nothing here. You can have a closed door and a meeting, literally a meeting going on and a closed door. And Jimmy DeCastro, the guy that ran this place, he set up a scenario where if you walk in, it's fine.
Yeah.
Now, you may have to read the room and realize you need to get out now. But it happens all the time. So I feel your pain.
Well, who was it that put scotch tape and their newspapers? They taped newspapers up to their window.
One of the on-air hosts. Mm-hmm. His name rhymed. It's. But don't say it out loud.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Who was it?
His first name rhymes with Wani.
And his last name rhymes with Ann Meyer.
Johnny B.
Johnny B. Yeah, no. Johnny B.
I think it was Gary was it Gary Meyer?
Yeah, but Johnny B's the guy in the studio.
Well, Johnny
Black
B.
Was
in there anyway. He had to have the.
But Gary put up newspaper clips?
Yeah.
Oh,
all
I don't
over.
Remember that.
To block out so that people wouldn't bug him while he was in there writing or whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
See, I take a different tact. I stay till 10:10.
Right.
Yeah. And
Steve,
10:15.
You don't have to sell yourself. You've been here till 10:15 every day this week.
Here's what I want to do. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to play Know Your John Williams. It's a hot new game show. John has given me some actual facts about his life. I may have made up some others. Okay. So 312-981-7200. I'm the only one that has the real facts and the fake facts. And you on the staff will be able to be lifelines.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Oh, good. Yeah, because we know you.
I know enough about John.
I'm going to hide my cheat sheet here because I'm sitting right next to Dave.
312. Dave won't cheat.
That's right.
312-981-7200. If you'd like to see if you know your John Williams, come back and we've got surprises to give away. As a matter of fact, Sandberg begged me to not forget what I've already forgotten. And that is to make sure that I tell you what. One of the things we're going to give away here is registration for two for MB's Bike the Drive. On Sunday, May 28th, kick off the summer, enjoy 5 hours of car-free riding on Lakeshore Drive. You did this last year, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
it was great.
We did this, yeah.
How many people? Everybody on the staff did it but me?
And we were out there.
We had about 10 people.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. I remember not going.
Not to give ourselves a pat on the back. Dave and I did the entire route.
How many miles
together.
Is that?
26.
Wow.
Wasn't it?
No, I think it was 30-some. Went all the way down to the Field Museum. Not the Field Museum, Museum of Science and Industry.
And then all
and then turned around
the
and went all the way up
to Hollywood.
Did you stop occasionally? It's 5 hours. It didn't take you 5 hours to ride 35 miles.
We stopped at North Avenue Beach for Gatorade.
Yeah.
Remember? Active Transportation Alliance is the nonprofit that benefits from the proceeds here. You can register at mbbikethedrive.org. Obviously, if you're going to play the game, we'd like you to be interested in biking the drive.
Yeah.
Now, there'll be some backup prizes as well because we'd like other contestants to play the game.
Yeah, and you get to ride with us because we're doing it again this year.
And we got Joan and Colleen already lined up who claim they know John. By the way, are any of your groupies welcome to play, John? Are you okay
I wish
it?
They would, yeah. Okay. I have a lot of good friends and listeners who cruise with us, who listen, who call in, who listen to my podcast in Minnesota. So if you're a John Williams person, this would be the time to call. I don't know that that's going to light up your lines, but
they're blowing up right now.
Yeah. Are they like your court?
And everybody gets a Chevy, drivechicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel, travel mug, and Papa Nicholas coffee from your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Know your John Williams. Hottest game show in America. It's next.
Big Bad John.
We're going to jump to the contestants here on the hottest game show in America. And again, prizes galore, including registration for MB Bike to Drive for free from us. You go to mbbikethedrive.org, and you're going to be able to get in as well. Let's start with Joan in Chicago. Good morning, Joan.
Hi,
did
Joan.
You know John Williams was back?
Yes, I did, and I'm glad about it, and good morning to you all.
Nice
morning.
To talk to you. I'm going to give you a fact. You tell me if it's true or false. It's that simple, true or false, and if you're not sure, you can use anybody on the show as a lifeline.
Can I use Dan?
You know what? Because that's funny? Yes, but only once. All right, here's fact number one. Fact number one. William is John Williams' middle name. True or false?
Ooh. I'm going to say true.
Would you like help from anyone, or you want to lock in with a true?
You know what? Yeah, let me have help. I jumped too fast into that one.
All right, what do you guys think?
I know the
I'm going to ask Andrea.
Oh, thanks, Joan. I know the answer to that, and it is true.
So we're going to stick with true?
Yes.
Let's go to the judges. Congratulations!
Ooh, thank you.
Nicely done.
William is your middle name? Because it's my middle name.
How about that?
Oh.
So remember, it's John William Williams.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Hold the line for us so we can get to your prizes, and let's go to Colleen in Ingleside. Good morning, Colleen. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing
Hi, Colleen.
Great. Are you listening to John 1 to 3?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
Good, good, good.
You're welcome.
All right, I'm going to give you another fact. You're going to tell me if it's true or false. John comes from a military family and once considered signing up for the Navy before he was talked out of it by Bob Collins, the legendary Bob Collins. Is that true? Got to remember, he interned for Bob back in the day. Is that true or false?
I'm going to say it's false.
Is it false? You want help, or are you just going with false?
I'm going to go with false.
Lock it in. No! She's a winner. Now, there is some truth to that question, though. You did intern for Bob, didn't you?
I sure did, and Bob did give me a lot of advice.
But he didn't tell you to join the Navy.
He did not tell me to join the Navy.
Or not join the Navy.
He told me to join the Marines, actually.
Yes. Now, your father served where?
Everywhere and in the Air Force.
In the Air Force. And the reason you didn't sign up for the Navy is because you were a scaredy cat?
Pretty much. Yes.
Are you a strong swimmer?
Yes, I am.
Well, that kept me out of the Navy. I'm not a strong swimmer. All right, let's move on now. We've got nothing but winners here. And thank you, Colleen. Don't hang up. Let's go to Barb in Lombard. Mr. Ladies Man here. Nothing but the ladies calling in for John.
How about that?
Hi, Barb.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Barb.
We're great. And don't forget, John Williams, 1 to 3. And Saturday, what time?
10 to noon.
10 to noon.
Thank you for that.
All right, now listen carefully. This one's a little bit layered, okay?
Okay.
In first grade, John Williams' family lore... John Williams' family lore is the neighbors ate John's dog, Mr. Chang. Mr. Chang, John's dog. Was John's dog, Mr. Chang, possibly eaten by the neighbors, or was it at least family lore?
I'm going to say false, but I need some help.
All right. Who would you like to pick? You can pick the entire show if you want.
I think this should be a team effort.
Dave, what do you think? Family lore or true?
I have no clue on this one.
No clue?
I think. I say, let's go with false, Barb.
You like false? Anybody else want to chime in?
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds weird enough to be true.
You think true? All right. We need a deciding vote here, Dave.
I'd say it's false.
You think it's false? Are we locking in on false?
Yeah.
Yes.
Turns out it's true.
It's true.
Mr. Chang?
So
we were living in Taiwan, and we had a wiener dog, and he went missing, and they pretty much told us. He was consumed by some of the neighbors.
They thought he was a wiener dog.
He was a wiener dog, and Mr. Chang was lost to the neighbors.
See, I thought Mr. Chang was the name of the dog.
That's he was, yeah.
Mr. Oh, Chang. That was, okay,
yeah, so Mr. Chang was the dog. Okay, Mr. Chang may have also eaten Mr. Chang, I don't
know. Yeah, if Mr. Chang, the neighbor, ate Mr. Chang, the dog, it's some sort of universal problem.
Where did the name Mr. Chang come from?
Yeah.
I don't know.
What an awful story.
I'm sorry, it's part of our family history.
She should win because
this is something else. You didn't know this, that you and I didn't know this, that you and I share.
What's that?
Our first family dog, Barb, was, for my timing, was a beautiful Cocker Spaniel named Ginger.
Nice.
And Ginger developed mange, which is a painful condition for dogs.
Yeah.
And one day, Ginger wasn't around. And my brother and I were upset. So my father did what he would do. He put us in the car, took us out where he thought Ginger might be, and I have a vision of him standing against the Ford Galaxy smoking Pall Malls. We're going... Yeah, look out there! As we yelled, Ginger!
Really?
Ginger! It was about 20 years later when we found out he put Ginger to sleep but didn't have the guts to tell us.
Oh.
So he just made you think Ginger ran away?
And... Yeah, ran away from home because that's better.
What a great story.
Do you think that was the best? Are you appreciative of that?
No. No, not at all. As a matter of fact, Barb, these stories are so disturbing.
I know.
You're a winner anyway.
I hope so.
No kidding.
Thank
all right.
You.
Hold on. Let me go to Monica here. We only have time for one more, so Monica's going to get a lot of facts here. Hey, Monica, you ready to play?
I am. Hello.
Hi there. And Monica, John Williams, according to family legend, has never eaten a blue food. Has never eaten a food that would be blue. Blueberries, for instance.
Bad meat.
Blue cheese? Uh-huh. Has never eaten a blue food. Is that true or false?
I'm going to ask for help from Andrea.
I'm going to say that's false.
Okay, I'll go with false.
Locking in false?
False sounds like a good choice.
Wow.
Never eaten a blue food.
No.
Why have you never eaten a blue food?
I have a thing about that color.
Wait, how about, I got one. I know something you've eaten.
What's that?
Blue Gatorade.
I have not consumed blue Gatorade.
How about
blue orange Gatorade,
gum?
Blue bubblegum, don't eat that.
So you hate the color blue?
I like blue, but I cannot consume a blue food.
Why is that?
Steve, I don't know. These are just facts about
you me. You know, you can technically say you drink water, which is blue.
Blue in insufficient quantities.
In
that's
insufficient
true.
Quantities? Yeah.
Monica, that's such a ridiculous habit from John. You win as well.
Why aren't you doing the first one on the sheet, Steve?
Trying to
I
help
think
you,
that's
Monica.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, we're going to go to this right now.
Okay.
We're going to play this now with the staff. John Williams once jumped 20 feet 2 inches in track.
You might want to get out a tape measure before you appreciate
the
awesomeness.
No, the high jump.
Yes, Mary, the long jump.
I'm going true.
True?
Yep.
It is true. Yes.
Yay.
That's pretty 20 good.
20 feet,
John.
2 inches. Is that still a school record?
I'm not sure.
You also threw in a fact on Cheryl Scott for me. What is this?
Well, in the Sun Times this week, they had a story, little one of those little blurby things about Cheryl Scott at AB7. And they said she ran track for Brown. And I'm like, well, I jumped for Joliet Junior College. Can I get a little press here?
20 feet, 2 inches.
Then here's the opportunity to kind of brag about that. Thank you, Steve.
John once turned down a job to be a WGN radio producer the summer between his junior and senior years in college because he wanted to finish school.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
And how much regret did you have?
I wanted to be on the air. I knew I didn't want to be off the air.
Do you eat hard-boiled eggs?
I know what you're about to say, and I do not eat hard-boiled eggs.
I'm
still on the blue thing.
Because in their true form, they're blue.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have any food things like that?
I get lots of food things like that, but not colors, I don't think.
I got it.
What's that?
M&M's.
M&M's. You know what? There, you just bust my... There you go.
Good job.
You've had a blue?
Well, I M&M. Have. So there you go. And Andrea busted me.
Yes.
Were you or were you not two-time president of the Manuka Community High School French Club?
Two-time president.
Answer in French.
Oui, deux temps.
Hey, by the way, here are the facts you would have been stumped by. John once considered leaving radio to be a television game show host. You could buy that, right?
Yeah,
you
would have bought that.
Yeah. John won $100,000 in the lottery and never told his wife. True or false?
We can't answer that
one.
Is
it true?
We're not talking about
that
one.
I like Brenda.
John once considered, while he was doing the afternoon show, to bring in a partner pairing with Kathy O'Malley. She ruined it because she wanted it to be called Kathy and John.
Yeah, it was. I wanted to be called John and Kathy. It got very ugly for a while.
Is that true?
No, of course it's not true.
Oh, okay.
And every year on Christmas or New Year's, I forget which, you'd wrap Christmas lights around you and run in your underpants.
That we know is
true, unfortunately.
Yeah. Until your children came of a certain age where they said, please stop.
By the way, I did the one time where I said, I was in the habit of saying, okay, if that happens, I'll take my clothes off and run around the building. Do you remember what was the bet that we did? And
I remember
bet.
It.
What was it? It was a Cubs
was it Bulls
thing,
or was it a, Bulls or Cubs?
It was some sports thing.
I don't remember the bet. But I remember him doing it.
So then I took off all my clothes except my underwear and my high top canvas Converse, and I had to run around the Tribune Tower. Mm-hmm. As we made the turn here in front of the Showcase studio, God is my witness, a kindergarten field trip is getting off the bus coming to the Tribune Tower, and I'm running at them with my underwear on.
Oh, that's fantastic. John Williams, 1 to 3 today and 10 to noon on Saturday.
Thank you, Mr. Cochran.
Nice to see you, buddy.
Bye, kids.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I want to remind people they just won the Pequod's Pizza gift cards, in case they didn't know. These are the people that played the John Williams game. And the Apt gift card from apt.com, Pequod's Pizza. Dubbed best pizza in Illinois by the Daily Meal, and in Chicago and Morton Grove. So there you go. David Ockberg's here. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Doing fine. Nice to see you as always.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
And that didn't sound convincing at all.
No, it's really great to be back.
No, I don't think you were excited about it.
I'm ecstatic to be back.
All right.
I'm kind of upset you didn't call me for my karaoke after the great job I did with the songs.
The song that you sang has caused enough pain.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to bring it back again.
People's ears still haven't healed.
All right. In the ridiculous situation we're in politically, with gutless Democrats and gutless Republicans.
Correct.
An orange president and a guy from Springfield that controls the state and doesn't talk. What are we doing monetarily when it comes to housing rates today?
Today, they're still extremely low in comparison to historic lows. You're still
lower than you would have expected, right?
A lot lower, especially after the election, because it shot up 0.75 point after the election. Everybody thought that they were going to drop because President-elect Trump, they shot up 0.75 point. And they've been trading. I like to tell people they've been trading within 0.5 point, quarter up, quarter down. And it's a flipping yo-yo, up and down, up and down. And today I woke up, we got good news yesterday at the end of the day, rates got better. Woke up this morning, rates got worse. So it bounces within 0.5 point radius. But it's still, 15-year fixed, it's still going to start with a 3. 30-year fix is going to start with a 4. And if you're lucky, you'll get into an arm with a 3, maybe a high 2s. So somewhere in there, it's still cheap money, guys.
Generally speaking, is it a bad idea for people to try to figure out a way to do a 15-year?
Here,
generally speaking,
if you're 56 years old, who calls me, who had Crohn's disease, is healthy, sitting with $80,000 with the credit card debt, have a wife who is going to be 54 coming up in a week and a half, and you talk to them about a 30-year fixed loan, and you're like, you know, this is what I'd recommend, and he's like, my wife won't go for that. Then you just go right to the 30, and you just don't try to convince people that aren't going to do, you know, something in their best interest. So long story short, John had me on his show up in, you know, he had me on the show. We got a caller right away. Long story short, we're going to put him into a 15-year fixed loan, save him $1,100 a month, putting him back into a 15-year fixed loan, pay off $80,000 worth of debt.
Wow.
He's going to be recovered fully from his credit challenge that he had when he came down, you know, when he went down sick and he had to live off his credit cards. And he heard me on the radio. He was like, everything you said is exactly what happened to me. My credit card companies jacked up my minimum payments. They doubled my minimum payments. We've talked about that. You know, we got the opening clip is me freaking out over that. It happened to him and it completely wiped him out. So now he's going to be able to get back to ground zero, go back into a 15-year fixed loan. He's 10 years until it's paid off. So I said, here's how you explain it to your wife, Kathy. You take the $1,100 that you're saving. You put it into an emergency fund for 12 months, build up an emergency fund to cover the mortgage payment for at least 6 to 8 months, 9 months. Then after the year, if you want to take part of that $1,100 or all of the $1,100 and pay it back into your mortgage, you'll pay it off sooner than 15 years.
Right.
But at least you'll be completely out of debt. At least your 677 credit score that was sub 600 2 years ago will be over 700 whenever you retire and go to buy another house, if that's what you elect to do.
So forget about your age. Forget about the situation you're in.
Doesn't matter.
Allow you to analyze it and figure out what's best for you. And then more importantly, listen.
Right. Listen. Exactly. I sell 30-year fixed amortized loans because I always tell people you could always turn a 20 into a 15. You could always turn a 15 into a 10. You could always turn a 30 into a 20 into a 10 into a 15. But if you go into a 15-year fix, you're locked with that payment. And I can't tell you how many people every single month we take out of 15-year fixed loans and put into 20 or 30-year fixed loans to pay off a credit card debt. Because this guy's in a 15. If he had the extra $400 to $500 that instead of going into his mortgage payment to apply towards his credit card debt, he'd still be in a lot of credit card debt, but just not as much. But that's what he wants. I'm not going to sell something he doesn't want. The wife's not going to go for it. So I'm not going to step on that landmine. It's not worth it.
Andre, I'm going to bring you in here, but I want you to notice that he's starting to get angry.
I know. I backed away just a little bit.
I tamped it down.
Since I've used him twice, and he was so wonderful to me.
Thank you.
David,
don't suck up
if you want to, first of all, is there a limit to how much you can refinance? And if you do, what if your appraisal for your second or third refi is less than your first or your second?
Yeah, then we're the bad guys. I mean, we get slammed for appraisers coming in light all the time. It's like, you know, everybody thinks that they look great naked in the mirror, and guess what? You really don't. Okay?
They are the only human on the planet. It. Whoever associated those two things in an analogy.
With an appraisal.
I mean, everybody, I live in a $400,000 home, 360. You know, I look great naked. Well, actually, you don't look great with clothes on either. So I'm betting that, you know, naked, you probably don't look great either. But I'm just saying. But, you know, everybody thinks that their house is worth more than it is, and we're the bad guy. Can you refinance? You can refinance as many times as you want. I'd be careful of the closing costs. Okay, because with you, we've refinanced you twice. We've given you closing cost credits that wiped out all the closing costs. You could have gotten to a lower rate, but you made the decision as an educated adult that you'd rather have an eighth or a quarter of a point higher and have us credit you all the closing costs instead of you throwing in $2,000-$3,000 worth of closing costs at that time. It's worked out good for you because we got you down once and then we got you down again,
right,
and we credited all the closing costs. You would have thought twice if you had to pay the closing costs the first time about doing it again. It wouldn't have made sense.
Did you ding your credit rating if you keep going back for more?
No.
No effect?
No effect because you're not refinancing every third or fourth day. You're doing it every 6-7 months. So
Andrea's hooked. She's addicted.
I get text messages all the time.
Every 3 days she wants to refinance.
Can I do it again? Do what?
$50. Save $100.
Like you're at 3.5 for God's sake. Right. I can't get you. Take it easy.
Let it simmer. Let it simmer. Give it room. Let it breathe.
Buy a pair of shoes. Buy, you know, go on a vacation.
All right, twist my arm.
Right.
What is Realtor Day?
Realtor Day is an exciting event that sponsors of this show and I have put together.
Okay.
Roy Spencer, you might have heard of him. Guy, yeah. You know, Permacy.
Know Roy well.
You know, Roy, great.
I've spent a lot of my own money with Roy.
So have I. Yeah. Phenomenal company. I use them personally. Tom Janke, Builder Supply Outlet.
I've spent money with Tom.
The Edge, 5 miles
good guy.
East of the Oakbrook Shopping
You know
Center.
What I just got from Tom?
What?
A toilet.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Did you
get
one of those high-rise toilets that your feet don't fall asleep when
Not
you're on
that
the toilet?
Old.
No, it's just they look very comfortable.
I can still get out of the smaller
one. It doesn't
one.
Matter. You know, because you know you check emails and
comfort
and
level is what
comfort
you're
level.
About.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
Did you
yeah.
get one of those?
Oh, as far as you know.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I got to come over and do something in your toilet.
I
check
don't
it
see
up.
That happening.
Oh, okay. So now
that's my own fault. I brought it up.
You brought it up. Yeah, so Tom Janke, I once said 5 miles west of the Oakbrook Shopping Center. Then I had to correct myself and say then you have to turn around and go 10 miles the other way in order to get to his store.
And it's worth it.
Oh, phenomenal. Forget about it. He's great.
Yeah. And it's a great store.
Great store. He's got one in Orland Park as well. MegaPros Joe from MegaPros is going to be there talking about different products and services that he offers. And
where?
JC Restoration. And it's in Rolling Meadows off of Golf Road.
Driven by it.
It's 90 and Golf Road. It's right by Schaumburg.
Yep.
It's Realtor Day. You need to be a real estate professional. It's free. We're doing it free. Roy Spencer, Tom Janke, MegaPros Joe, JC, Warner Cruz, and I are putting together an event for realtors. Next Tuesday, we're serving lunch, free lunch, complimentary lunch. We're going to do an hour presentation, how we can help you sell your homes faster for more money, and how you can impact, positively impact your current clients and your future clients' lives. Because who do they call after a home, after they buy a home, something breaks? They call the realtor.
Sure, of course they do.
Okay, you know, it's not the realtor's fault that the sump pump went out, but want to be nice to actually hear Roy Spencer talk about and see what's going on. And like, you know what, Roy's a really nice
guy. So you're getting all of that knowledge and lunch.
For free, next Tuesday, May 9th at JC Restoration.
All you do is give.
I'm giving, and we're giving Sam, and Peter Fasano is going to drop off in those mini pies, you know, those mini delicious pies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You could hold in your hand and you scoop them out like a beaver and you just eat them like a little.
Scoop them out like what?
Oh, you like hold them in your left
what
hand.
What did you say? Scoop them out like what?
Like a beaver. You like put it in your left hand.
What's nature TV have you
been
watching?
You open your mouth and you stick your two front teeth in there and you dig and you like scrape like a scraper. Like
good God,
a,
man.
Like
this
a claw.
In public.
And you, as you're driving, you could do it because you could be like
that's
this.
That's the Fasano Pie Company.
Oh, it's delicious. And then you get it all over yourself.
Yeah.
So
like a beaver.
Like a beaver.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to have this event. If you're a realtor, it's very simple. Oh, they're so I
focus. It's next Tuesday.
It's next Tuesday. 11:30 to 1:30. I can't wait to just have a Fasano pie. So it's next Thursday, 11:30.
No, it's Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. You said Thursday.
No,
it's,
you said Thursday.
I said, you're getting me all confused.
Okay, it's next Tuesday.
May 9th. May 9th. It's great that we're promoting this, and we're promoting the wrong day. It's Tuesday, May 9th. Real estate professionals. Come on out. It's complimentary. We're putting on this event. Roy Spencer, Permaseal, MegaPros Joe, Tom Janke, Builder Supply Outlet, Warner Cruz, JC Restoration, I. 1 hour presentation. How you can
sign
make more
up
money.
Where?
Go to WGNDavid.com, of course, for all your real estate needs. And also, help.
You've
help.
Already crushed the show. Bill and Wendy are going to be on it a lot.
Don't
11.
Worry about them. They're okay. Help save Ross Cochran's job in advancement. We're up to 2,911 likes on Facebook.
Yeah.
His goal is to get to 3,000.
Get to 3,000 today. Give him 100 likes today.
Please, just go to David Hochberg, Pearl Mortgage. Like it. Follow us. We have very valuable information on social
That's
media
true.
That your
true.
Son is putting out
yeah,
there. Four
nice
or five
job.
Things a day. Amazing
yeah.
information.
Oh, you eat pie. He's doing a nice job.
Yes. We're talking. We're back to Fasano. It's telling you it's the best pie we're giving away.
All right, beef.
Real a day.
WGNDavid.com.
Realtor show, real estate professionals. Hope to see everybody there next Tuesday.
All right. Give yourself a shot.
Okay. Thank you.